Welcome back to the Boundary Corner Podcast, and welcome to the Boundary Corner Podcast 2022 Hokie Season Preview Panel. My name is Curtis Wilson, and the brainchild behind this idea, my partner, Brian Siegler. How are you today, big buddy?
What's up, Curtis, man? We got a big one tonight for everybody. This has been rolling around in my brain since early spring. I'm glad we were able to put it together. And let's just say this. I'm hyped. I'm ready to kick it with these guys, to chop it up, to talk some Hokies. Let's do it.
Absolutely, man. So fun. We were chatting just before we got on. Everybody locked, everybody loaded. So let's start up. Brian, our first panelist, he was a Hokie offensive lineman from 1994 to 1998. He was all Big East. He was a team captain. He is the founder of Victory Life and the Victory Life Legacy Podcast. He's also a co-host with his cousin, this guy named Mike Vick. I don't know if you ever heard of him, on the Vick 757 podcast. Coming to us from Northern Virginia by the way of the 757, Mr. Dwight Vick.
What's up, man? What a dope. What that intro is tough. That was a good intro.
You like that?
Yeah. That's like tough that? Intro. That was good.
Yeah,
was
I good. Mean, we gotta get some pageantry to this thing. This exactly. is a big thing yeah. here. We're gonna get a little pageantry here.
Yeah, but Dwight, no we appreciate doubt. You no joining doubt. Us tonight, man. But and we're looking forward because we got some good questions for you. We got a lot of good questions from the audience. Brian, let's bring our next panelist.
Yep, our next panelist. He's hunkered down in Blacksburg, Virginia. He's got a big day tomorrow with Hokie Media Day. He's the managing editor of Tech Sideline, and he holds down one of the coveted gray chairs on that podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, David Cunningham.
What's up, guys? Glad to be back. My second time being on your guys' podcast. We had a lot of fun last time and excited for the panel.
Hell yeah. Welcome back. It's going to be a good time. I know you're excited about all the media day shenanigans tomorrow and some of the practice periods you get to watch and everything. So big day.
All right, Brian, next. As Brian has always said, this is a offensive lineman podcast. So hell yeah. Of course, we've got another Hokie offensive lineman from 2013 to 2016. He played for the Hokies. He was an all ACC offensive lineman. Currently, he is the co-host of the Locker Room podcast with fellow Hokie alumni, Luther Matty, live from Charlotte, North Carolina, the Queen City. We got John McLaughlin. John, how are you, man?
Doing well, man. Glad to be here. This is also my second time. And like you said, y'all love linemen, so I love coming on here. So let's do it.
Absolutely. Anytime we get a chance to get a lineman on here, we take that advantage. Welcome back. Appreciate you jumping on with us. This is going to be a big night tonight.
Absolutely.
All right. So the next man on this list needs no introduction. He's coming to us from the 757. He's been holding it down since 2013 as the host of Don V Fridays, the legend himself, Don V.
Hey, how y'all doing? I'm Vito. Oh, I ain't nobody, man. I'm just a fan, bro. I'm just happy to be here.
You've been doing it big for a while, man. We appreciate you jumping on. We're looking forward to chatting up with you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Appreciate you coming, Vito. All right. Next man we got coming on here, he is the co-host of the Victory Life podcast. And on the weekends, he's running the weekend and the overtime host at 106.7 The Fan in D.C. He is live in the live here in the west end of RBA, where he used to be the producer for Radio 910 show, Mr. Danny Noakes. Danny, how you doing tonight, man?
What's going on, gentlemen? Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you being here.
It's great to be among this great panel. These great panelists. There's a lot of great people here today, so I appreciate y'all including me.
Not a problem. Glad to have you on. I appreciate you jumping on with us. It's going to be a good time. We got a couple more here. We're going to move next to we got a couple guys that are, you know, Sons of Saturday affiliates here. The first one up, you can hear this man on the Hokie Hangover, Sons of Saturday Hoop Pod, Basketball Conference Football Podcast. You can catch him breaking news for SI and of late dropping new dad picks on the socials from all over the state of Virginia, Mike McDaniel.
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Mike, how you doing tonight? Did you change a diaper right before you hopped on?
Not right before, but it's called a half hour before.
There we go. It was in the ballpark. It was in the vicinity.
It was in the vicinity. We know how that goes, man. Mike, we appreciate you joining us here tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right, one more person. Next panelist, he's checking in from the West Coast in sunny, and he's saying hot LA, which I know that's unusual for them out there. He is the co-founder and one-third of the Sons of Saturday podcast, a preseason trailer maven. If y'all hadn't seen what he dropped a couple weeks ago, that it was tight. I loved it. Also a guy who's got some connections back to Halifax County for me and Mr. Siegler here. Grayson Wimbush, how you doing tonight, man?
What's going on, gentlemen? How we doing? Thank you for having me in the building. I'm very, very excited about this.
Yeah, well, we appreciate you jumping on. I'm looking forward to it. I know you're out there in sunny LA. I'm surprised that you're hotter than us. I know we got some mid-80s temps coming up next week, and you guys are probably out there blazing.
Oh, that's yeah, crazy. Man. It's a dry heat. Back on the East Coast, y'all got that humidity that we don't have here. So,
100% on that, Grayson. I think it was 90 and like a 106 index here in Richmond today. Walk outside, start sweating before you take three steps. So, absolutely.
Hell, you know me. I'm sweating standing still at 73, so if it's humid.
Brian, you sweating in the wintertime, and you know that. Not I'm even cooked. A joke. All right. So, guys, we really appreciate you all joining us tonight. A lot of great voices. A lot of good opinions. Got a lot of good thoughts, a lot of good background. So before we jump on it, we're just going to say a couple things. For the live listeners tonight, if you guys have any questions or comments for this panel, let us know. If your questions are for a specific panelist, please specify that panelist so we can get them the question. So we might throw someone here in real time. Some of you guys did respond yesterday to a tweet Brian put out. We really appreciate that. Now, one other thing, kind of already talked about it with the guys here. Big thank you to all of again and to all you listeners joining us tonight. A lot of fun going to happen. But what we're going to start off with is we're going to give everybody one question. Y'all know we gave y'all those earlier. Just, I don't like ambushing anybody. But for the other guys, kind of we mentioned it before, if y'all have something y'all want to say, feel free to piggyback. If you've got a different viewpoint, let us know, and we'll do it. So, Brian, what we got up first?
All right, so we're going to let our elder statesman, Dwight Vick, lead off tonight. First question for him. Since Coach Pry was hired, you've had a chance to talk with him a few times. Is there a standout intangible factor for success that you think Brent Pry brings to the table that might help the team this year?
Oh, yeah. You guys can hear me, right?
Yeah, yes, we got you. We got you.
Yeah,
that's a great question. You know, I know Coach Pry, but seeing him in this role, being back in Blacksburg and talking to him, I talked to him at the spring game. I was there several weeks after the spring game. They were doing some install right before the season kicked off. Text him when he first got the job. The biggest difference I see in just him being here in 6 months is that he's invested. He cares. I know that's like a simplistic answer, but at the end of the day, I think you can tell in just talking to him and talking to some guys up here in the DMV where I live, Northern Virginia, Maryland, D.C., kids I know being recruited, they just know it's a different energy. And you can just tell like he's really invested in Virginia Tech. It's not, you know, a midpoint stopping ground. Like he is really trying to put a foothold in Virginia throughout the Commonwealth, but also he's really connecting to the alumni, like the guys like me and McLaughlin and all the guys from the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, and the 2000s. And I think in regards to this season, I think when you got guys like Eddie Roy coming back, you know, I'll be up there probably next week, and a lot of guys are coming back just to come and watch practices. There's a connection there where in the last 5 years, there was a disconnect between what the expectations for Virginia Tech football should be and what the previous regime had. And I don't think those guys, I said this on Don V's space before, I don't think the current players or the guys that just recently left understood what it meant to be a Hokie football player. I think it was just they were competing, wearing the colors and uniform. But I think the guys there now, specifically Pry and his staff, from what I see, they understand what it means and what they are supposed to be doing. Like he just genuinely cares about the program. My last point, when I was there for the spring game, I talked to him. you know, we chopped it up. He wanted to take a picture of my wife. He talked to every former player that came through when we were at the field house or actually the indoor spot getting some barbecue. He's just talking, and he just, you can just tell it's not like fake. It's not manufactured hype. Like, he really has a plan. You can just tell that the players are buying into it. You know, as much as I love the former players, we're not playing no more. The current guys, they're rocking with them. And I think you can just see the energy when they're practicing. I talked to a few guys that are on the team now, and they were talking about this is the hardest they've ever worked since they've been at Tech. So I love hearing that.
Yeah, it sounds like that emphasis on that competition, that competitiveness at practice. And I think that's the big thing in getting back to that culture that Virginia Tech built. You know, it started with you know, the guys before you. You kind of built on that, and then obviously in the 2000s that got taken to a different level there. So getting that culture back and understanding, as you said, what it means to be a Hokie, I think that's going to be big for this year. No doubt,
absolutely.
All right. So let's flip it over and let's take a look at what's going inside this camp. You've heard about the competition and stuff. So I'm going to flip it over to David Cunningham. David, you know, you've had some up-close look at the camp practices since last week, you know, some views on Wednesday and Friday, other than quarterback, because we all want to know, is it going to be Grant Wells? Is it going to be Jason Brown under center at 7:30 down at ODU? What other key position battles do you have your eyes on? And about to get your first look at week two tomorrow and start speaking with people.
Yeah, first of all, I think Grant Wells, I think most people know that Grant Wells is kind of the leading candidate right now. And the coaching staff has kind of not said it directly, but they've alluded to it. But as far as other position battles go, one of the things I've said multiple times, whether it's on the Tech Sideline podcast or written in articles or said it on the radio, is that Tech's starting 22 on both sides of the ball is pretty solid, but it's the depth, it's the young guys that's really where the question marks lie. I think wide receiver, Caleb Smith, he's proven. Jaden Blue transferred from Temple. We kind of know what he's going to bring to the table. But DeJuan Lofton, Jalen Jones, Dallin Wright, that group of guys – I'm really curious to see who kind of steps up as wide receiver number three, number four. Even some young guys like freshman Tucker Holloway, you know, he was repping with the twos last week in practice. I think that position group, it can't just be two guys the entire season. And as on the other side of the ball, I think at Sam linebacker, that's a new position for Brent Pry in this defensive scheme. Keonta Jenkins, J.R. Walker, and Keely Lawson are all working there. And it seems like Keonta Jenkins has the edge, but these are three guys who have never played the position before. So how that position unfolds, kind of what Brett Pry is looking for, and Chris Marv, the defensive coordinator, what they're looking for in that position, I think those are the two main position battles, so to speak, I'm keeping my eye on.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense. You talk about the 22. I think most of us would say you look around at the 22 like we have good players. But it's getting to 23 to 35 where it's like, this is scary. If, you know, if somebody goes down, we could definitely be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, especially when you look at the offensive line and defensive line. I think that's kind of – the defensive line has a little bit more depth, but especially on the offensive line, it's a lot of guys working in the two deep with that second and third teams that are maybe former walk-ons or current walk-ons. And you know, when you've only got four or five guys that up front that have played before in a ACC game or FBS game period, you know, if there's some injuries, you know, that doesn't really bode well for your season.
Yeah, absolutely. Depth in the trenches is definitely my biggest fear. And I'm just going to kind of swing this over to John here. Back in the spring, Coach Price said, you know, we kind of got six offensive linemen that he feels like he's ready to go with, and there's a lot of question marks after that. You know, since then we've got a couple, you know, true freshmen that have hit the roster. We had one that switched from defensive line to offensive line. So let me ask you this from your experience, and thinking specifically about Joe Rudolph with this current roster, were certain coaches in your past able to push you harder and get more out of you than others? And how necessary you think that will be for the offensive success this year?
Absolutely. You know, I think back to when Jeff Grimes was the coach, and we were always competing. He would sometimes put a third string in the first string for practice, and that first string guy's looking like, you know, why is he in the first string? It's because you slacked off yesterday. So I think Coach Rudolph's got that mentality too, man. I think he's all about competing. And, you know, he's so technical with his coaching. And I think with the clips I even saw, just the way they're getting their eyes in the right place and everything, waiting to watch. So that kind of helps the depth, because I think they're going to be coached well. I think that second group is going to be coached well, and they're going to get in there early. But, yeah, like David said, you know, one man go down, you know, we're looking on paper, we're looking, you know, kind of rough there on the depth. But with Coach Rudolph, we definitely got some help. I would say that.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I think, you know, as you said, getting guys that are coached up and at least know what they're doing, how to do it, have the fundamentals in place, and that gives you something to build off. And I think some of the young guys, particularly thinking Braylon Moore and Xavier Chaplin, I think, you know, they definitely have you know, high ceilings, even if they weren't necessarily the highest rated guys coming in. So I think there's some opportunity there as well.
Absolutely. I'm going to flip it over to Vito next here. Vito, you were one of the first on the fire food train several years ago. You've talked into – you've talked
–
Hey, it was you. You were the lead. You were the lead dog on that when we will all tip our hat to you. But you've even mentioned on your show a few times about how the prior regimes kind of hurt players' careers and their shortcomings. Mm. You take a look at this roster this year. Is there anybody that the prior regimes maybe failed you think that could stand out in 2022? Or maybe it's a good player and it goes from being a good player to like, that boy's going to get drafted in the first two rounds and make some money.
I mean, for real, I think everybody that was kind of negatively affected left already, whether that was to the draft or to the workforce. I think everybody was just like, yo, we out. So there really was no good answer because, I mean, Dax came back, but he's had a full career already. So I would say Malachi Thomas, even though he was hidden, I wouldn't say they failed him last year. He was a freshman, but he was hidden. So now, you know, only thing I can say is who else have they stashed that we don't know? It's probably more mystery than – because who we saw who got failed, they left, for real.
I like that point, man. I love the point you just made about the negativity that, you know, some of the guys are gone that had that negative outlook. And I laugh about your Dax. Your Dax had a full career. Dax just got lucky with COVID. He gets one more season.
Hey, yo, hold on. Hey, Brent,
go ahead. Go ahead, Big Dwight.
How long has Dax been there?
This is his
fifth year.
Oh, so it's just 5 years?
Yeah.
Feels like seven, bro.
It does feel like he's been here for a minute, for real.
Dax is my guy. I just, you know, I was like, he's been here a long time. Like, when I go back and watch old games, I'm like, he's there. You know, he was, 18,
19, 20, 21, and 22. Yo. I think one reason it feels that way is Dax was such a big recruit out of high school. I mean, he was like a top 150 player. So we've been hearing
Dax's name since late 2016.
Exactly. But to the point, I like what Don said there. I'm gonna give you kudos to that, man, because what you just said about, are there players that got stashed that were in doghouses that were good players that the other staff just didn't put on the field? And to be honest, what Dwight said, what we're hearing about Joe Rudolph, I don't think that's going to happen. I think if you're the best player, I don't care who you are, you're going to be on the field against ODU in September.
Yeah, I'm with that. I agree. I think they're gonna find a way to get the best guys out there. And I think talent evaluation so far has been better with the new regime, just from what I'm seeing with how they're playing with the depth charts, how they're getting more out of guys that we didn't see really a lot from last year. I don't think you just see that success out the gate, but, you know, we'll see how that turns into anything in 2022.
David Cunningham, you got somebody.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mentioned Keyshawn King. I think he's a running back who, you know, he's entering his third or fourth season now, and we saw glimpses of him, whether it's in the backfield or returning kicks. But, you know, he kind of, I don't want to say he had off the field issues, but there were things that held him back from playing. And he, you know, when Brent Pry and the staff came in, Brent Pry admitted, okay, there are going to be guys that leave. There are going to be guys that don't gel with the culture and want to leave. And clearly, Keyshawn King is a guy, and he's just one example of a guy who maybe got in that doghouse, in air quotes, if you want to put it that way, who, you know, has an opportunity now. You know, we've seen in the two practices I got to see last week with the rest of the media, you know, Keyshawn King's looking explosive. He's looks like he's developed more. And I'm curious, with this new culture around the program, how many other guys like that who were maybe held back or didn't receive an opportunity because of something that went on, maybe behind the scenes, discipline related, whatever it might be, that are getting a new life, so to speak, with this new staff.
Hey, John, go ahead with what you got to say, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, you haven't seen a lot of players leave, and that's important. That's important that a lot of players haven't left for the portal, or even when, you know, Coach Fuente came in and Beamer was gone, we had Trey Evans left, we had Kendall left for the draft. You haven't seen a lot of that this year, you know. So I think that's important that they're actually saying, hey, we want you to stay. We want you to be a part of this thing, or at least give the spring a try. You know, then, you know, you see where you go. I think they've had those one-on-one meetings with these players, so that means a lot too.
Yeah, it sounded like out the gate that Price said he was going to have a lot of difficult conversations with folks and, you know, be honest with where they're standing now and where they, you know, potentially see them standing, you know, by the end of spring and then by the start of fall, whether that is a position change, whether that is focusing more on being a depth player this year versus somebody that's going to be in the starting lineup consistently. And once you have those conversations, that at least gives those players the, you know, the ability to make the best decision for them, whether it's, you know, sticking around and being a part of it or, you know, seeing what they can do elsewhere. But let's pivot a little bit. Danny, kick this one over to you. You spent the spring game in the booth with Mike Burnup, and I assume you had a little time with the team that weekend as well. What part of this team do you hope has improved the most since you called that game back in April?
Yeah, that's a great question, Brian. And that was a pretty incredible experience, just sharing the booth with Mike Burnup. Everyone has asked about how that has been, how it went, and just being alongside him. He's just an encyclopedia of Virginia Tech knowledge, whether it's football or any other sport, especially football, though. That man is incredibly talented, and we are very lucky to have him in Blacksburg. But in the production meeting that we had before that game, the day before, we definitely got the chance to talk to Brent Pry. And there were a lot of takeaways from that, some overall things that I thought were interesting. You know, he's obviously a defensive guy that came over from Penn State, and he believes that a strong defense in this conference will take you as far as that you need to go. You know, you look at all the success that a team like Clemson has had recently, and although they're incredibly talented on both sides of the ball, they've been mostly predicated on playing defense with the exception of Deshaun Watson's success. You know, they've had a litany of incredibly talented defensive players. So when you play on the coastal, where it's even more wide open, it becomes even more important, I think, to have a good defense. And I think that is there. You have him bringing in his scheme, and his players will come as he gets to recruit. And there's obviously a palpable hype surrounding this Virginia Tech program that we haven't seen for a very long time. And I think that's going to help them. But when it comes to the exact answer to your question, Brian, it kind of goes back to a theme of what we've all been talking about so far in this podcast. And it's that they need some help on both the offensive and the defensive line. They need some improvement on both the offensive and the defensive line. What I remember most about that game is Jason Brown had absolutely no time to do anything. I mean, he was running for his life every time he took a snap. Every time he took a snap. I swear, I don't remember a snap where he was not under some sort of pressure. And to me, he wasn't going up, or he didn't have the number one offensive line in front of him. So what that tells me is they have some depth issues right there. But if you flip it over and look at what Grant Wells and you know, everyone remembers the touchdowns he threw over the top, and those were impressive, but you know, you'd like to see the defensive line get some pressure there as well. So I'd like to see them, you know, in the trenches improve on both sides of the ball. And I think that they have the coaching staff to do that. And the last thing that I'll say too, is just an overall takeaway from being among that staff for that spring game weekend is that Brent Pry is very reliant right now on his offensive coordinator, Tyler Bowen, to obviously run the offense and help get things set there. But, you know, Brent is still figuring out how to, you know, the same way he sees defense as a defensive coordinator, he wants to see it on the offensive side of the ball. He wants to figure out how to make other defensive coordinators squirm and how to figure out how to you use this personnel that they have to their advantage. So the foundation of a lot of success that we've seen for this Virginia Tech program have that we're used to seeing where they're regularly competing for ACC championships, that foundation is being built. The bricks are being laid right now. It's just going to be about staying healthy this season. Can you get consistent play on in the trenches, both offensive, defensive side of the line? And then, you know, over time, can you get those recruits in?
Yep, I love that you said it. It's the play of those two lines, Danny, because I think we have some good players there. I think you look at Silas, you look at Johnny Jordan, you look at, you know, more on the right side of the guard there. You look at some of the guys on the – we have good players. It's just nothing behind it. So that health is important because if you tell me – and this ain't going to happen. For the guys that played in here collegiately, Brian, John, Dwight, specifically point out to y'all, y'all know playing the line and playing against the defensive line, people are going to get hurt. Whether it's a nick and you're out a couple weeks, you miss a practice – and God forbid, you know, a guy out 6-8 weeks where it's – if that happens, that's going to be, you know, catastrophic for this team. So, you know, I hope we can avoid that because I think we've got good enough players to compete with everybody on the schedule this year.
Yeah, I'll piggyback on that just real quick before I let you get into the next one. But I'll just say, and I know John had talked about it a little bit earlier, but I think that we're struggling depth wise, but I feel like with some of these new coaches, particularly Rudolph, since we're talking in the trenches, I feel like our baseline is at least raised a little bit because you are going to have a little bit better foundation in those guys that are further down the depth chart to maybe lean back on. So yeah, you might not have guys with a lot of experience, guys with this, that, the third, but you will have guys that are, for their youth and inexperience, are still more prepared probably at baseline than what we've seen recently.
Hey, yo, and also too, man, you don't get experience. You get experience by playing. And then on top of it, if you get to the last 3 years, one of the biggest issues with the offensive line wasn't – you had some really great players individually, but many times in game situations, short yardage, critical plays, red zone, you had a lot of illegal man downfields, pre-snap penalties, lack of focus. I think with Rudolph there, like when Grimes was there with John and guys like JB Grimes who coached me, you're going to have guys in the two deep that are going to know what they're going to do. I think many times in previous seasons, our offense was not coached well when it came to the trenches. There was a lot of mistakes made in RPO situations and guys did not know what they were doing. Like if a guy went out, another guy came in and just did not know. It wasn't even about physical play. It was like lack of understanding scheme and concept.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, as you said, Rudolph's going to help raise that baseline. So that's going to definitely help downstream, even if you don't have, again, that game experience and aren't necessarily the most highly rated guy on that side of the ball. Curtis, I'm going to let you kick the next one over to Mike.
Oh, yeah. So Mike McDaniel, you are constantly talking Hokies. I mean, everywhere. Probably in your hometown as much as you do with podcasts. But of all these things you wear in your industry, fill in the blank on this. And I'm almost going to piggyback and say you can't say quarterback because that ain't fair. But I won't hold it against you. If blank has a great season, the Hokies will exceed expectations in 2022.
I mean, it's the obvious answer. It is quarterback. It is Grant Wells. Like, Virginia Tech has not had a stable quarterback room in years. Like, you got Gerard in 2016, went really well. You had basically a full year of Josh Jackson, and then he gets hurt in 2018. And since then, it has been chaos.
the wrong quarterback started the 2019 season. Then by the time you handed over to Hooker, he wins whatever it was, 6 out of 7 or 7 out of 8. He had 13 touchdowns and 2 picks, threw for over 1,500 yards. And then Fuente and his staff make him compete for the starting quarterback job again in 2020. That didn't make any sense, right? And the rumors were that if, you know, Burmeister didn't break his foot, you know, later in the season, didn't have COVID early, you know, he might have had more of a hand early in the year in the starting quarterback job. Like, that should never have happened. You see what Hooker's doing now at Tennessee. Obviously, he would never have done that at Virginia Tech because he wasn't getting the coaching that he's now getting at Tennessee with Heupel and the way that he grooms quarterbacks. He just was not getting that in Blacksburg. But, yeah, it is the quarterback position with Grant Wells because Virginia Tech hasn't had stability at that position in a long time. It's obvious, like, when the offense really started to drop off, really started to crater under Fuente and Cornelson, it's when they stopped developing quarterbacks. After Josh Jackson, it was kind of a disaster short of that 6 or 7 game stretch of Hendon Hooker. So it's got to be Wells. Tyler Bowen has got to get him comfortable early on. The one difference, I think, between what Pry is inheriting and what Fuente is inheriting is that Pry's got his work cut out for him a lot more than Fuente did. There was still a lot of talent on that 2016 roster. And not to say that there
shout out John
on this Virginia Tech roster, but it is not the same in 2022 that it was in 2016 when Fuente took over. And I think we can all acknowledge that.
Yeah, it's crazy to see that, you know, at one point we had 3 former 4-star quarterbacks on this roster and couldn't seem to figure out what to do with any of them. The ineptitude that created, I feel like, was the downfall. And I mean, you can point fingers at Fuente, you can point fingers at Corn, and, you know, truthfully, the fault lies with both of them in some ways, because, you know, at some point, if something's not working, you gotta move on and do something different. You can't just keep.
I mean, they had to go get a quarterback from Kansas because they couldn't figure out which 4-star that was already there to start with. I mean, it was a disaster. So, and Willis had his moments, but it was pretty clear how the offense was clicking when Hooker came into that Miami game. There was a clear difference in the offense. And instead of kind of riding with that, Fuente and Cornelson going into 2020 kind of messed around with it, and it should never have happened.
100% on that. That should have been Hendon's job from Jump Street because of what he had done at the end of the year. And even the 2 losses that he had legitimately were the best game a quarterback's ever had at UVA. And then that bowl game, well, you know, we all know how that bowl game went, because that was some wild shit beforehand. That was the best
game a quarterback had at Kentucky, apparently, that day.
Yeah.
Best running ever. Receiver.
Yeah, like what?
Damn running quarterbacks all the time, man. But, yeah. You know, I knew you were going to say quarterback. I knew you were. But I think I think someone like Malachi Thomas, like, if you tell me Malachi Thomas breaks 1,000 yards this year, I think that means overall a few things. A, the offensive line stayed healthy. That meant probably Grant played well. I think you could choose a few different people. But if you tell me Grant Wells goes out and, you know, plays good, yeah. But, I'm always one of these challenges. Like, is there anybody else you want to talk about? Just because quarterback's always the answer. If you've got an elite quarterback, a 6-win team can become a 9 or 10-win team. And a
quarterback definitely smooths it out. I mean, Grayson just brought up, you know, Lynn Bowden there. I mean, that's a team that, yeah, good on the defensive side of the ball, but the offense was pretty much
run
Lynn Bowden and nothing else at that point.
I saw David Teal post today, like, if Grant Wells just continues the production that he had his first couple of years at Marshall, that he would have the best production at the quarterback position for Virginia Tech in like 2 decades. So why don't we just do that?
Yeah,
I'll take it. I mean, especially if we can keep interceptions to 10 or under.
Oh yeah.
Let's roll with it. I'm going to kick it over to Grayson here. You recently got to sit down with the man himself, Brent Pry. And he said, you know, he said he's going to be calling the defense come this fall. At least through 2022, we'll see if that continues going forward. But what has you more excited this year? Prize attacking Bud Foster inspired defense or Bowen's smash mouth spread offense?
Well, first I'll say this. I'm excited about the defense because A, Pry will be calling it, and we just have so much experience on the defense. You have two bell cows in fifth-year seniors, Dax Hollifield and Shamari Connor. So, I mean, they're going to know what's going on. They're going to be flying around out there. A lot of experience across the board. But, I mean, it's got to be the offense. I mean, we've been through it the last 5 years, gentlemen. Like, it's insane. So, I mean – you know, David Cunningham, he talked about, is it going to be Grant Wells? Is it going to be Jason Brown? Are we going to see Connor Blumrick taking some reps? He's still listed as a QB on the depth chart, also an athlete too. So I don't know, but I agree with David. I think it's going to be Grant Wells. You know, I think you all would agree with this sentiment. If the offense isn't contributing to us winning football games, I don't care what kind of numbers they're putting up. The previous regime put up numbers, and that became a scapegoat there at the end, but they didn't put up a lot of victories. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what matters. You know, I think I'm really excited about Caleb Smith. He's the bell cow on the offense. He's the guy you see it in all the videos, like on social media and everything. He's the leader. He's the guy that the younger guys look up to. I guess I have to wonder, like, who steps up. I think Dwayne Lofton is going to have a breakout season. I think Malachi Thomas can be dangerous. It'll be interesting to see how we incorporate Keyshawn King again. Chance Black, Kenji Christian, two new guys on the block in the running back room. I think another guy who has the potential to have a breakout season is Nick Gallo at tight end. There's a lot of talk about him being very dangerous this season. Apparently, he's improved a lot in camp. While we have some young guys on the offensive line, you have Johnny Jordan, you have Silas Zanzi in the locker room. At the end, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to expect, and that's why I'm excited about it. I have no expectations going into the season, so we'll see, man. Let's go. I'm rooting for Tyler Bowen. It can't be worse than what we had. Please.
I'm with you because I feel like we – you know, we somewhat know, like, Pry's a known quantity. We've seen a lot of tape from Penn State, stuff from Vanderbilt. He's the head guy. He's calling the defense still. So we've got a little bit more of a point of focus where we can look back and bring some tangible things out. But there's a lot of things that we can't really quantify with Bowen yet. And I think that not knowing that also kind of feeds that excitement, right? So I feel like the offense, you know, aside from all the other things with how the offense has been a roller coaster, you know, the last 6 years. Just that kind of unknown factor to a point of what we're going to get with this offense. I'm looking forward to that.
Hey, Dwight, you got some things to say about leadership. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, no. When Grayson was talking, it just took me back to when I heard Caleb on Don V's podcast and Don V Fridays, and it was really refreshing and insightful.
No, he was on TTP.
Sorry, okay. TTP. My fault. I apologize. Shout out to Tim. But it was really, really insightful because it was stuff I knew. Like, just being a former player, you could just tell. Like, it was just one of those things where he was speaking with conviction, but he was also providing insight because even though Grayson is 100% right, the offense put up numbers. To hear that they couldn't get extra work in when the field was closed and not being able to watch film after practice, stuff that I did back in the late 90s. You know, like, just, and also too, the leadership, like, I agree with Grayson, like Grayson talking about like leadership with him. I think that's another thing that we've been missing, which I feel like is there this year where you have established leaders. I think if you look at any Virginia Tech, Big East or ACC championship team, or even teams that won 8, 9, 10 games, there were established leaders on the team. You could see it when you watched the game on television. You saw guys talking. Even guys like D'Angelo Hall, when he, you know, called out Miami in 2003 when they had won 30-something plus games, and he said, I think we're better. I don't think Miami's all that. He took a stand. I don't think you really had a lot of leaders in recent years, and I think that was more so because of the culture in Blacksburg, because I don't really think anyone felt comfortable taking that kind of stand. And if they did, it became divisive where the team wasn't close. And I just I think Grayson is 100% spot on with Smith being one of the established leaders. And I think those kind of things are one of those characteristics you look back on the season when they, regardless of what they win, if they have a good season, you say, oh, yeah, they had this player. He was really good, but he was also a leader. And, you know, and I just think that was a great point by Grayson.
Yeah, if I may butt in here, you know, speaking with Caleb Smith down in Charlotte at the ACC kickoff was really eye-opening. And this was all stuff Caleb kind of just let loose, kind of the same stuff he said on the podcast. He told me about how, you know, his former position coach told him at the end of the season in December last year, he suggested that he transfer to an FCS school or a Division II school. Like, that's, you know, the culture, elite, especially on the offensive side of the ball, just didn't seem to be there. You know, he told me that he and Braxton Burmeister had plenty locker room conversations, plenty heart to, you know, many heart to hearts where they were both just like, it's not in our hands. There's nothing we can do about it. And I know, you know, Caleb's a guy who's a former walk-on. You know, he's been in the program for a really long time. He had to earn his keep, so to speak. You got Silas Janzy, Johnny Jordan, even. He's a transfer, but he's played college football for a really long time. That's not even, to, you know, without mentioning Drake Dulius and Nick Gallo, a tight end, fifth or sixth year guys. There are a lot of veterans in this room. And I think, from my understanding, especially on the offensive side of the ball, got a little bit out of hand where guys didn't necessarily have an opportunity to kind of be themselves and be a leader and step up. It was more, I don't know if drill sergeant style is the way to describe it, but kind of, hey, you're going to do this. And if you don't do this, you're getting punished. And, you know, coaches can kind of lead their programs, you know, in various styles, but it clearly did not work out, you know, especially in the latter stages. So to talk with Caleb Smith, to talk with Silas Janzy, even Dax Highfield on the defense side of the ball, and to get a sense of, you know, I think it was Silas who told me that he's having fun. They're enjoying practice. They can be themselves. They don't, you know, Caleb Smith told me that he, cause he got the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty for excessive celebration in the spring game. I don't know if you guys remember that. He told me that it kind of just all came out because the old staff didn't let him celebrate if they scored during practice. Just simple things where, you know, they can now be themselves and leaders can kind of emerge naturally, if that makes sense.
That makes 100% sense because in the situations like this, the coordinators and everything are there, right? The guys that play, they're there and they're supposed to help you learn to lead. And eventually the reins are to be taken. Dwight, you were a captain. John, you guys played. You were a crucial part of an offensive line. You've got to have those leaders in the locker room. You've got to have the guys that take the reins, right? And from the way everything is sounding, what we've been hearing the last few weeks, especially on the offensive side of the ball, nobody wanted to take the reins for fear. And you can't play football that way. Like, you can't. Like, you can't play football. I don't want to celebrate and, you know, run laps. You know, that's something, you know, it's like doing something at work. It's like, man, I'm not getting on that project and getting, because it's a crap project. I don't want to get in trouble.
Well, I'll say this too. You can be a hard-o coach and not, you know, have silent lunches and ban people from the facilities during certain hours and all this other stuff. I mean, you can be a hard coach. You can push your players, you know, sometimes beyond the limits that they think they can reach, but still, you know, not be ridiculous with the things that you're putting in place, because I don't think anyone's benefiting from not watching more film. No one's benefiting from not creating camaraderie during meals with their teammates. Like, that type of stuff is not building the team and building the culture that you want to win. So that's just my two cents on it. And it's sad that it seems like that kind of defeatist attitude, like, really fed into the offense, especially as the year went on last year's. But
hey, B, I said that on my show with Danny and I one time when Dorian Strong got the interception on the Friday night game against BC. It was a key drive, a key stop early in the first quarter. Anytime a defensive back at Virginia Tech, since even before the Beamer era, got a pick He was trying to take it to the house. Dorian looked to the sideline for certainty. He didn't know. He looked for advice. He looked and he kind of stumbled and he got hit and he fumbled the ball. Subsequently, BC got the ball back and scored. That's what I mean about culture and being assertive and knowing what you can and cannot do. You know, Ronyo Whitaker, Brandon Flowers, Garnell Wiles, D'Angelo Hall, Cam Chancellor, so on and so on. They didn't have to do that. They had Torian Gray and all those defensive guys, Coach Foster, Coach Ward, that gave them the green light to make plays. And again, I mean, I just think that's why I go back to the culture we have established right now. And we're not even really in the midst of it yet. We're still scratching the surface.
I think about Blackshear trying to push the pile instead of reaching out for the goal line too, for fear of, you know, getting punished for a fumble or something like that, just trying to make a play.
Hey, look, bro, I'm telling y'all, look, y'all mentioned, I don't know which one of y'all said it, the Kentucky game when we lost them in the bowl game, when the quarterback and all them was running up on us and hit Duke, stole one of our players in the face. I'm telling you right now, look, I can finish now. Beamer would have, he knew what was up. There was stuff that happened I can speak on now when the wrestling team tried us. And he talked to the team. He said, look, make sure y'all do it. Just don't do it here. You know what I'm saying? So look, it's just a culture, bro. Like, you can't, I mean.
Take it out of the facility, but do what you need to do.
I don't knock the players when that happened because I knew the players were wanted to retaliate, but I knew it was one of them things where they just couldn't be themselves. It was like, you know, you couldn't be a man. You couldn't defend yourself. It was crazy, you know.
All right, so first of all, this little section, we've rolled off on 50 minutes here. I love it. We got a lot more to come. But before we take our break, I'll ask you fellas this question, and I'm going to come back to each of you. What three games are the most important to the Hokies this season? Y'all think on that. Before we get our panel's answers to that tonight, we are going to take a quick pause with a message from our digital partners.
As we take a quick break, we'd like to tell you about getting your free website report from our digital partner, Grassroots Digital Marketing Studio. They'll tell you how your website ranks on Google, on-site SEO, and social media. No commitment to buy anything. You can get your free report by visiting grassrootsdigitalstudio.com/free-website-report. Now back to the episode.
All righty. So before we get y'all's answers, me and Brian are going to give ours just so we can have a jumping off point. Mr. Siegler, I'll let you lead, sir.
All right. Three most important games for the Hokies in 2022. UVA, Boston College, UNC. I say that for a couple reasons. Number one, I feel like looking at our schedule, those are games that we can win. We have the potential to win. UVA, obviously rival. You want to take care of business there. I think they've got significantly better, at least from a talent standpoint, offense than we do. But their defense is still garbage. I think we still got a chance to get one there. You know, Boston College has some talent in places, but they lost a lot on the offensive line. I think they're still vulnerable in some areas. And UNC still has to show me that they're more than just a good recruiting class. So until they do that, I'm not sold on them either. So I feel like those are three games that we're probably not favored in, but games that are winnable on our schedule. And that's going to be the difference between whether we're, you know, sub 500 or looking at a potentially 8-win season. So that's kind of where I feel like are most important there. And it's always important to win your conference games and take care of business against recruiting rivals. We've lost a couple recruiting battles lately to BC. We obviously recruit directly against UVA, and UNC has been across our border way too damn much. So that's my three.
All right. I'm going to jump on mine real quick because I got two that I'm in agreement with, and one's for a different reason. UVA's one. Obviously, the momentum we're getting in here recruiting in the state-wise, you want to keep that. You want to keep them an afterthought to the recruits. I agree with Brian on BC, but for a different reason. That is going to be the first home game under the Brent Pry era. That is going to be an 8 o'clock night game in Lane. It's going to be on ACC Network, unfortunately. So you're not going to get you're not going to get all the viewers.
Spurtle time, boys.
Spurtle, Jesus. But think about this. You go into that game, the atmosphere is going to be electric. I know some of you guys will be there.
Me and Brian have talked about it, going potentially and driving back. I don't know about that. We'll see as the time comes. But can you imagine you have the electric atmosphere and you beat them? Think about the hype. Think about kids on campus that week. My last is going to be the Miami game. Mm. Not for the sentimental reasons that we're not going to be playing them every other year, which I think we all are a little bit angry about, especially Mr. Vic up there in the corner. but for this, Miami with Cristobal, they are getting tons of hype on the recruiting trail, getting the top 20 ranking. They got to come to Lane. Regardless what happens in that game, if we beat them, wonderful. Our profile's raised. If we compete with them with all their talent, our profile's raised. So that's my three. Grayson, since you were at the back end, we're going to let you go. What are your big three games for the Hokies in 2022?
Absolutely. I'm with you, Curtis. I won't say Miami because you said it, first off. Boston College, first home game of the Pri era, 8 o'clock. It's going to be packed to the gills, probably going to be sold out. Hopefully ACC Digital Network can get some high-definition cameras to capture Enter Sandman because they did a terrible job for the UNC game.
Yeah.
And that game out of my three, I think, is the most winnable. Definitely, it's probably the most winnable. Number two, 2 weeks later, West Virginia. I mean, that I think is the most important game on our schedule.
Okay.
West Virginia Thursday night, hardware game, Black Diamond. The way it ended last year was an abomination. So many head-scratch moments in that game. Got to get that trophy back. Blacksburg is going to be insane. And then I'm going to say NC State. Ooh. NC State, yeah. I'm going to say NC State. It's been a while since we played down there in Raleigh. And they're supposed to be relatively good this season. If we can beat Miami, great. But if we can go down there and beat NC State, beat the Pack, that's going to be a huge deal, especially in Brent Pry's first season.
All right. I like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's definitely a statement game if you can go out and win that one. Because they are, in a lot of ways, some people are having them as the favorite to win the ACC this year. That's going to depend on whether Clemson can put, cobble together more offensive consistency or not this year. But, they definitely return a lot, especially on that defense. So that's going to be interesting to see. Let's kick it over to Mike next. What's your three?
Yeah, my three, I think you got to start with the home opener against BC because that sets the tone. I mean, the Old Dominion game sets the tone. It's a road game. You got to win that game because they're ODU and you can't do what Fuente did in 2017. And that's literally game one for Pry. But you got to not only look competitive against what I think will be a pretty decent Boston College team, but if you can win that home opener, it sets the tone for the entire regime, right? Gets you off to the right start at home. I think that's really important in front of your fans. The second one for me is NC State coming off of a bye week, I think is really significant. So NC State, I think, is going to have a really, really good team this year. Devin Leary's coming back. They should have one of the top two or three defenses in the conference. And you get to see what kind of staff this is going to be coming off a bye and advanced scouting, right? Because you have 2 weeks to prepare for one of the best teams on your schedule. And it's coming off of the Miami game as well, which I think is the third most important game on the schedule. It's a really important 3 week stretch there, the Miami game, the bye week, and NC State, because if Virginia Tech is going to lose to Miami, like let's say lose that game, which I think we can all admit Miami will be favored there. If Virginia Tech loses that game and then goes into a bye week, how do you respond to adversity, right? Coming off of one of the bigger games on your schedule, a rivalry type game, how do you respond to adversity, right? And going into a bye week and coming out of it, playing a really good NC State team that doesn't have the historical, stature in terms of like the history behind them, right? That a West Virginia does, that a Miami does, that a UVA does. But playing one of the better teams of your schedule coming off a bye week, that's a really important game. But I think if you're Brent Pry and you're looking at the three most important games on the schedule, thinking back to when he was a graduate assistant way back in the day, it's West Virginia, it's Miami, it's UVA. Like those are the three most important games. So he's going to try to have this team competitive in all three of those. And I think to have a really successful year one, he's going to have to steal one of those, right? I point to West Virginia. It's at home. It's a Thursday night. West Virginia, they're in this weird state with Neil Brown where, like, I'm not sure how good they're going to be. I'm not sure if that's even going to work out with Neil Brown. Tech should have beaten them last year, right, like in Morgantown. If it weren't for, I mean, they were gifted an interception, and then the goal line play calling was unbelievable. Let's rehash it. But yeah, you got all that the guys who are left on the roster who were there for last year's game, man, they got to try to bounce back and get a win there. So that is a game that's circled. That's a game everybody's got circled. It's one of the big, it's a huge home game. It's one of the early home games on the schedule. You got to try to win that one.
All right. I want to hear Danny Noakes' opinion next.
Well, I like where we're going with this, gentlemen. I think we're going to be all on a very similar page when it comes to the three biggest games here, because to me, it's very simple, and it starts with West Virginia. I loved what Grayson said about that West Virginia game being the biggest game on the schedule this year. I completely agree with that, and it has a lot to do with what happened last year and the several cracks they had inside the five-yard line with the game on the line. You have the ball close to punching it in and you can't do it. That has absolutely a lot to do with it, but with conference realignment on the horizon and us not knowing whether Virginia Tech is going to end up in the Big Ten, the SEC, a reformed ACC, will UVA still be there? Will West Virginia be coming over? Will we be going to a conference that includes West Virginia? It's a dormant rivalry that is just, it needs to come back. And Virginia Tech is in a spot here where they definitely need to go and win that football game coming off what happened last year. So I start with West Virginia. I move over to North Carolina after that because I don't think they'll beat Miami, and I don't think they'll beat NC State. I hope that they will, and I hope that, as Mike was saying, they come out of the bye week prepared to compete against one of the better teams in the conference and potentially one of the better teams in the country. I'm just looking at this more of a – from a position of games that I think they're better positioned to go and win. And I think that would be North Carolina versus an NC State or a Miami. So I'll take the Tar Heels. I think they have another chance to get a solid win against a longtime ACC coastal foe there. And then at the end of the season, I think UVA is always going to be there. It's always going to be the most important game, one of, if not the most important games on your schedule. And with them returning Brennan Armstrong, you know, they're going to be a competitive team this year, despite the fact that they're also bringing in a brand new head coach with Tony Elliott. So it's pretty simple. West Virginia, UNC, and UVA. It's a pretty classic lineup.
That's funny, Danny. That was actually my original. I talked myself into putting BC in there instead of West Virginia. So I got no qualms with that three. Vito, what's your three?
My three going to be different than everybody else's because I think a little different. Wofford, and listen to me, we about to put 50 of them hoes on Wofford. Wofford is the most important game on the season. Fuente's teams, I don't want to make this shit about Fuente the whole time. Fuente said the team wasn't built to blow out Richmond. Teams like Middle Tennessee State, teams like Maine, no, not Maine, the Rhode Island, coming up in the burg feeling comfortable, right? I want them to make an example out of Wofford, bro. I want 50 of them hoes at least. I want to see the third stringers in. I want to see walk-ons in that game. No cap, bro. I'm tired of seeing Wofford, these FCS schools coming in lane feeling comfortable, bro. That I'm going to know everything I need to know Wofford game, for real. Next game, Liberty. The fuck? Losing to Liberty? No, bro. No. Malik Willis gone. We should have beat them by 50 with Malik Willis. It's Liberty. Let's keep it a buck, man. Liberty came in the bird comfortable, kicked their feet up. Shout out Jay Ham. That was some dumb shit you did, bro. But we shouldn't even have been in that position. Nope. Liberty, game two, most important game of the season. And then game three, NC State. Because I think if NC State got a number beside their name, the boys will wake up and play them. But they NC State, they ain't known for doing shit for real.
Nothing.
So let's say NC State don't got a number by their name. We might bullshit in that one too and get flicked. So Wofford, Liberty, NC State with no ranking beside their name. Most important games of the season.
There we go. I like it. I like it. I like that we, you want us to get back to just stomping on some throats,
beating somebody's ass.
If you come in here and you're not with it, we need to go ahead and just hang half a hundred on you and put you back on the bus.
Love it. Love it. All right, John, you got to follow that up, man. But I think you can do it.
Yeah, so I was going to change my first one, but I'm going to keep it because what Don V said. ODU sets the tone for me. That's the first game of the season. That's the first game of the season. If they're not putting 50, like Don V said, they're not putting 50 on ODU. I don't care. We are better than ODU. That's 100%.
Thank you.
We should never lose to ODU. We got embarrassed last time we was there. And we're going to their place. We shouldn't even go to their place. We should never play.
Yes.
I'm sorry. We haven't seen a text.
There we go. There we go.
So that's number one.
Now we're getting real. I like this.
To me, that's already disrespectful that we got to come to y'all house and our stadium bigger. We got bigger fans. But anyway, so I'm going over to you first. That sets the tone. And they're really going to tell you how this team is. Are we going to play down your potential or are we going to play down our competition? So that's a really important game for me. And then the second one is Miami. Miami is right there, kind of where we are trying to get back. And the U this, they bringing all their former players back, all this stuff. So I'm excited about the rivalry. I'm ready to have this rivalry back. Because after UVA, to me, Miami is second. I feel like that's a lot of former players, too. Because we came in hating Miami because they think they're better than us. They always thought they were better than us. So that's a big one for me. New coaches, you know, trying to get that foundation back. And then, obviously, UVA. We got to be UVA, new coach. But, yeah, that's my three.
Right on. I love that. What I'm hearing last two guys is we want to see what we were. If you are the lesser opponent, don't play down. Smash them. I love Don B's point. Bring the walk-ons. It's 56-0. See if the walk-on can get to 60-burger. All right. David Cunningham, you have to follow both of them up. So you have the floor, sir.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. No, my first thing is Old Dominion right off the bat, man. Like, you know, you guys might remember my famous unsportsmanlike conduct picture from the Old Dominion game in 2018. That's probably the best thing that came out of that game, to be honest. I mean, this is a program that last time you were in Norfolk, you got completely embarrassed. Virginia Tech going to Old Dominion, like Jonathan said, you know, the in-state games on the road at Liberty, at Old Dominion, those are games that the fan base doesn't really enjoy. You know, I think the majority of the fan base would agree you need to play those games at home. But Old Dominion, this is an opponent. Ricky Ronnie's the head coach. Brent Pry, you know, was a defensive coordinator at Penn State when Ricky Ronnie was the offensive coordinator. The staffs are going to know each other a lot, you know, a lot of Penn State blood in between. But I think just in general, you're not playing at home. You're opening up against a much lesser opponent, but that shouldn't matter. It should be, this is a game that establishes the culture for the many years to come in the program. And kind of what Don and John both said, you know, against the Delawares, the Rhode Islands, the Furmans, the Richmonds, the Liberties, Virginia Tech in the Justin Fuente era never once, except for maybe that Delaware game in 2016, blew any of those guys out. They were always close games. Virginia Tech maybe was up by a touchdown against Rhode Island at halftime in 2019. Mm-hmm. You know, those are games where you need to get guys development, especially now that guys can play in four games and also redshirt in the same year. You need to get those guys in the games when you can. Old Dominion, you got to start off strong. My second game is West Virginia. I think this is, you know, the Boston College game is going to be exciting, but West Virginia means more. I'm sure Brent Pry is going to get the guys juiced and ready to go on a Thursday night. It's going to be 20 something years to the day Virginia Tech first played on a Thursday night against West Virginia. If I believe, maybe not 20 years, but it'll be the anniversary of that. You're playing on a Thursday night against West Virginia. That's what Virginia Tech was kind of born on. And especially with the way everything ended last year, I think that's really important. And then I'm going to pick a game for my third, and I think it might be the most important game. Nobody's picked yet, and that's Pitt. Virginia Tech, since Pitt joined the ACC, in 2012. Virginia Tech is 1-4 at Pitt. It's no longer Heinz Field, but I think the two best teams on the schedule this year, and they are who I picked as the media member at ACC Media Days to win the two divisions, Pitt and NC State. Pitt returns the most talent, most, I guess, returning starters in the Coastal. Miami might have the most talent, or North Carolina might, but I Pat Narduzzi can develop guys. And NC State, I picked NC State to win the conference. I just think NC State returns so many guys. But NC State's so late in the season, I think you're not going to know exactly what you're going to have. You know, what if some guys get injured, you know, in that Miami game? That game's so late. I think it's important to set the tone on the road at Pitt, a place that Virginia Tech has only won once in recent memory. And Pitt is a team that is going to be good. It's kind of a measuring stick game, so to speak. Pitt, and NC State as well. That's kind of like the fourth team on my list. You know, in those games where you are playing good competition, in this first year where Brent Pry hasn't necessarily got all of his guys in, is still kind of establishing the culture, building it layer by layer, you know, you need to know what you have. And Old Dominion game is going to be really good for the culture. You'll know the West Virginia game, you know, with all the crazy people coming to town. And then that Pitt game on the road, it's never an easy place to win. I think the fan base will know a lot about this team, you know, after that Pittsburgh game when you got Miami and then you got an open week and then you got to go down to Raleigh.
All right. First of all, Dwight's upset that we made him go last because we took off. But here's the thing, Dwight. We know you're going to bring it right.
No. I'm not even going to say it. I was just tripping on Don V and Jonathan taking my – I would have the same kind of responses. Nah, but look, at the end of the day, man, like there's no right or wrong answers, our opinion. But I agree with that, what everybody said. You can't really go wrong with anything. I'll just say this. Like real quick, I played against the Miami Goats. So I played against – I was just watching. I got home from work early. They ran both Miami 30 for 30s today if you were home. They had the one, and then they showed the other one. And I was part of that rivalry with Miami. I was part of the team that beat them for the first time. All those household names, I went against them. So I'm not part of this hype train. I'm not going to make this Miami game more than what it is as far as, oh, Cristobal. They've always had better so-called talent. But that's because we don't get the same respect until we smack them in the face. So we beat Ray Lewis. I beat Ed Reed. I beat everybody that could talk about. So I'm not about to sit here on this show and cite Miami because of some dude named Steve with glasses that runs 247 is telling me Miami's got a great class. Y'all miss me with that. I've been in 5 years of battles with them. Are they going to be good? Yeah, but I mean, whatever, bro. So they're not on my list. I'm going to tell you like this. I'm going to tell you like ODU, Liberty, and Wofford, that's just – I'm lumping them together. Like Don V and Jonathan said – I don't know how many times during the Fuente era, we were great in scoring points in that first half when it was scripted or we had everything going our way. When it was time to make adjustments or when adversity entered the stadium, we crumbled. After that Greg Stroman, Edmonds brother era and the era with Bucky and Isaiah Ford and Cam and all of those guys, when those guys left, we lost a lot of dogs. We lost Luke Reynolds. We lost Adonis Alexanders. We lost to Trayvon Hills. We didn't have any dogs consistently that when the game got tough, we crumbled. As Don V and Jonathan said, too many teams, like Liberty was real comfortable in Blacksburg. You know what I'm saying? How many times, whether you were in the stadium, you were at home, and you went to the, you know, if during the old days, you went to the bathroom, you were already up 21, a block punt and a pick six. We were struggling with Richmond last year. Richmond. I need to see us going to ODU. My oldest daughter's going to ODU. She's moving in 2 weeks. She chose ODU, and I was down there for orientation. They feeling real good about beating us. I can tell you right now, I'm from the 757, and ODU is feeling real good about that game. So they're on my list. I combine them, Wofford and Liberty. The other game I got, it's a tie between UNC and UVA. Again, I got to be creative because I'm going last. And that's only because we recruit the same players, and there's this misconception that UNC, since Mac Brown's gotten there, they've been killing us, and they haven't. He's only beaten us one time, you know what I'm saying? And even in that time, we started Brunmeister, and we waited to put in Hendon Hooker, and he finally came in, and we came back, and it was a ball game, but we waited too late. Other than that, UNC has not shown anything despite all these recruits. Because I'm not one of those guys that's going to tell you they're killing it like that. Because if you were being honest on the Boundary Corner podcast, a lot of these high-profile recruits they've gotten have not panned out. And it's been 3 years. So don't talk about they're killing it. It's been 3 years. Okay? So UNC and West Virginia, to me, or UNC and UVA, those are culture games where UVA is in the same boat we are. They feeling real good. They feel like Elliott's going to take the state. We're out recruiting them now. They got some guys on staff, some former players. So I think if you continue to streak against them or continue that mindset and beating them, that's going to be real helpful in like keeping that mystique, that stranglehold we have over them mentally. And then the other game, you can throw any game. I'm not really going to hype up NC State like that. I think like Don V said, NC State, even that year my cousin went down there when they were, NC State was favored. The only time they really dogged us like that was our first year in ACC after that tough loss to USC. And then we came home and they had a defensive line. They all went to NFL and they sacked Brian Randall like 8 times. That was a great NC State team. Other than that, typically Virginia Tech, even during the Fuente era and even when Beamer was there, we play teams like Louisville and NC State. We tend to kind of rise up to them. It's the inferior opponents we struggle against. So, I mean, that's my list, man. I mean, I don't think anybody – I think all the lists were great. But to me, you could probably hear the passion in my voice, man. I'm just tired of our brand taking a hit. I'm tired – like, I grew up in the era where Miami always got more hype than us. But that reason why I didn't like that – I didn't want that game to change because that was always a good measuring stick for us. Just like West Virginia, when I played them every year, was a good measuring stick because those are culture games. Because Miami, again, I think somebody posted on Twitter today, when they were really, really good, they had Ja'Cory Harris. They were supposed to be back. They were ranked 9 in the nation. We were ranked number 11.
2009.
We smoked them 31-7.
Yep.
And they pulled a UNC and said it was raining too hard. Okay? Ryan Williams and Tyrod Taylor went crazy. Anyone that knows the game knows Tyrod was better than Ja'Cory Harris, but who was getting all the hype? Ja'Cory Harris. Yep. That's just because Miami will always get the hype. So don't let these guys named Steve fool you on these sites, man.
Couldn't tell College Game Day a damn thing that week. I will never, ever forget it. They were saying Ja'Cory Heisman, he was going to come in there, blow the doors off of us, and all of a sudden the elements – It was like a monsoon. It was like a monsoon. Yeah, it was like a monsoon. Block punt, Matt Reedy for a touchdown. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Terror dome and the pouring down rain.
That's what I'm saying, awesome. Bro. Like you get the right guys in Blacksburg, like they're getting the guys from Highland Springs and the right guys in. You get the guys that understand culture. When I say goonering, I ain't talking about getting DUIs and getting arrested. I'm talking about when you on the field, you know they're gonna bring it. You know they're gonna have a sense of urgency on every play where you take pride. And maybe that includes a personal foul, or maybe that includes some intimidation. But I mean, at the end of the day, that's when I watched this, it was very tuck your shirt in, crisp, shake hand, pull up, help a guy up. That's just not my type of football. I want to get back to Tech football when we were, you know, people hated us. People forget real quick, and I'm going to shut up. People forget that in 04, they did not want us in the ACC because we were too physical. They said our brand of football was too grimy. You know what I'm saying? So I can't wait to the ODU game because they talking – I'm telling you right now, guys, and everybody watching and listening, they talking real greasy down there. They feel like it's going to be sweet. I'm just telling y'all. That's my game.
I'm hearing the same thing every time I'm down there. I'm hearing that ODU going to put up a real good fight. Mm-hmm. We got to go out and set the tone and make sure that thing is settled by halftime.
Listen, if we lose that game, bro, all this stuff we doing, all these great shows – all this buildup, what changes? If anything, we're in a deeper hole. You can't lose that game. You can't lose that game.
That's a recruiting bed that we are trying to reestablish good relationship with. It's at their place. It's sitting there in the 757. It's a team that on paper we should squash. If you don't go and do it, that's a problem.
100%. 100%. All right, Brian, we got a bunch of questions here, believe it or not. So I'll let you start picking them out. I'm going to pick one here because we got this texted to us because our buddy Robbie Compton, he's a coach down in North Wilkesboro. He wanted to ask basically the offensive lineman. We'll start with John here. How much did life change going from playing high school offensive line to power five offensive line as far as the time to prepare, your commitment and level of opponent. I'll let John, you lead, Dwight, if you want to chip anything in, because you did the same thing 30 years ago.
Oh, man, it was night and day, man. Now, when I got to college, the speed of the game, you had to think and be fast at the same time. So it was a difference. In high school, you can, you know, pretty much pancake anybody you want or take plays off or whatever. You know, you can kind of play around because you're bigger than everybody. College, no, you're your size, and the game was a lot faster. But I mean, as you get going, you get smarter in the game, and you know, that helps watching film, and obviously getting in Coach Gentry's program helped me a lot. So I would say it's like night and day, man. Going from high school to college is a big jump.
Dwight, anything to add on top of that?
Yeah, I'll be quick, man. You know, because I just finished talking a lot, but I'll just say he's 100% right, bro. Like at the end of the day, I always say when it comes to recruiting rankings and looking at offensive linemen in high school, I think that's the toughest position to evaluate because, you know, I think – and I played during the golden era of the Peninsula District, so I went against some dogs at Phoebus and Bethel and Warwick and Minchville. But at the same time, there was nights, man, in scrimmages or regular season games, I was going against a guy that looked like a toddler. You know, he just came to my waist, and I would just look at him and look in the stands while I was blocking him. But then you get to Tech, and you're going against Cornell Brown, John Engelberger, Corey Moore, Carl Bradley, David Pugh, and Nate Williams, and you're going against some men. And it's just one of those things you got to be physically tough, agile, and also be able to think, because the offensive line position, you have to be aggressive, and you have to know how to block one play eight different ways depending on what front you're going to see. And that's tough. And you got to be able to do it because, you know, you won't know who I am until I miss a block, you know. So it's an adjustment.
Yeah. And to add with what Dwight said, our defensive line was almost better than everybody in ACC. So I looked at it as if I can get better with them, you know, like you said, blocking Corey Moore, I had James Gale every day. I had J.R. Collins, Daddy Nichols, the second string. Like, you know, they made me better as well. So going from high school and then having to block them every day, man, that was definitely challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, y'all talk about, you know, high school guys being small. I mean, I played D3. I'm 6 foot in cleats. Played at about 245 in high school, when there was some small ass guys I was going against. So compared to you two gentlemen, I know that's that, you know, that jump from going against, you know, occasionally players like that to, you know, everybody is running around with your size, you know, your agility for that size. And I think that's the big thing that, you know, people sometimes discount is like, you know, you know, people are 6'4", 6'5", out there, 320 pounds, and can fucking move. And I think that, you know, some people don't really think about that sometimes. So that's good to kind of put that out there for the listeners. The next one we got here, this is kind of to everybody. So, you know, let me know who wants to jump in on this one first. This is from at Hunker Down Hokie on Twitter. With all of our exceptional skill players, all of our experienced skill players being more role players than home run hitters, who in this offense is going to emerge as the big play threat in 2022? And I'll actually kick it over to Mike first. I'll let Mike lead on this one if you got something, Mike.
Yeah, Malachi Thomas. I mean, we saw glimpses of it last year, but I think it's going to have to be either Malachi or maybe Keyshawn King, like David mentioned earlier, like someone who has shown the potential and has produced at times throughout their career in Keyshawn King's case, or, you know, at times last year in Malachi Thomas's case. And, you know, all indications are Malachi Thomas put some weight on too. So I think that's huge. That's a concern over the course of a full season. You know, last year he was so lean when he was playing last year. That was a concern. If he was going to, you know, kind of project this forward over a full season, you know, what was that going to look like health-wise for him? But I think it's going to have to be somebody in the running back room. Potentially Daywon Lofton too, though, if you look at like the receiving core, like we haven't really seen enough of him yet to really make an indication one way or another if he's going to be kind of like a home run hitting type guy, but he's got some serious speed. So if you get the ball in his hands, I think that would be something I think that would benefit Tech as well. But yeah, I mean, I think the question's fair. Like a lot of the experienced guys returning are kind of more role guys, or at least that's been their role so far. It's just been possession type receivers, and like Caleb Smith's case, right? Or, you know, a guy who's been like a goal line type back, or has been in and out of the running back rotation, like Jalen Holston. So who's that guy going to be? And I think it's either going to be Malachi Thomas or Keyshawn King.
Yeah, we saw Malachi kind of jump out with two big games last year, and then we didn't see a whole lot of him down the stretch there. So it's going to be good to see if he can kind of settle into a consistent role for us this year. And because we really, I mean, thinking back, you know, Herbert 2020 year aside, it's been a long time since we've had a consistent lead back. So it'd be nice to have a guy that we could see that from, maybe in back-to-back years, finally have a true lead back again. So,
it's, you know, David, we'll see, man, about
that. Yeah.
It's not since David Wilson as we had guys
hey,
like
don't, that. Don't forget Khalil Herbert now.
I know, but I mean, I'm saying David.
Yeah, I was thinking back to back years.
Back to back years.
We've had the one off.
Nobody even got to watch his games because it was during COVID. So I don't know if that really counts anyway.
Suck for that guy. I think it's. I mean, the receiver room is where you always want to find someone. Is it anybody sneaky out there? You know, we're hearing things about Tucker Holloway being fast, getting upfield. He's a true freshman. I can't see that. I mean, is it someone in the return game? I know Cole Beck returned. Cole Beck's fast, but you're not going to put Cole Beck out there and play wide out. But can he do a kickoff return? And I hope, David, in a few weeks they let you guys into those sessions, because the guy runs a 10-1-3 100 meters.
He's going to return kicks. He's going to return kicks. Brent Pry already said that.
I mean, okay, that was his game. And I watched him play in high school.
In Blacksburg High School.
That kid was a freak on kickoff returns. He'll be out there.
So to answer the Cole Beck question, I mean, he's going to be a guy that they're going to get the ball to in space, right? You know, his hands, they've talked, you know, Brent Pry mentioned last week, his hands are fine, you know, but he also hasn't really touched a football, played competitive football in 4 or 5 years now. You know, it's been a while. He's not going to catch a slant route across the middle in traffic. He's going to be a guy you throw to the flat and you let him juke a couple guys.
Yeah, put him in week three, yo. Yeah, put him in week three. We only know experiments week one, man.
Week three.
Wofford is experimental day.
Yeah. All that you're saying, David, that's David, what you're saying, that's what I need week three. Don't put him out there on 35 and we are driving and he's tipping and going in the air. We don't need those experiments.
You're telling me you don't want him to run a jet sweep to open the season?
Nah, man.
No.
I need him
no.
To the boundary.
No.
let me answer Brian and Curtis's question real quick. I think, to Mike's point, I think Malachi Thomas is the guy. Few people remember he had a 3-touchdown game against Syracuse last year as a true freshman. Like, he came out of nowhere, had a 3-touchdown game. I did research after that game. As far as the record goes back to 1987, which is when Frank Beamer first started, he's a first true freshman ever to record 3 touchdowns in a game. And then he disappeared down the stretch and got, you know, didn't have more than 7 rushing attempts in the final 4 games of the season. He had inconsistent touches. How Virginia Tech uses him, and this will be a question I'm sure somebody will ask Stu Holt, you know, tomorrow at media day, how Virginia Tech uses the running backs. Virginia Tech needs to have balance on the offense. It can't be just running the ball or just passing the ball. In the receiving game, I think Caleb Smith, we saw what he could do during the spring game, and I think there was such a disconnect after Holman Wiggins left in that wide receiver room. You know, Caleb Smith, again, was told to go – he was suggested to go play at FCS level or D2. And we saw him torching, you know, Virginia Tech's DBs left and right in the spring game. He had 2 50-plus-yard touchdowns with Grant Wells. We know the arm Grant Wells has. I think it's going to be either Malachi Thomas or Caleb Smith in the passing game. You know, one of those guys is kind of going to have to come up and make some big plays, but it's going to have to be a balance. And it cannot just be the two of them contributing. Because if it is just the two of them contributing, you're going to see an offense is going to stall a lot. And, you know, we all know what happens when you only have 2 or 3 contributors, making it easy for the defense to man up on them.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. And I think that, you know, when you look at Caleb Smith, I think his leadership is obviously going to be probably the key attribute he brings to the table this year. But having that veteran presence in that room, I think, is going to be a benefit for everybody across the board as well. But I'm going to go to another question here. This one's also kind of to everybody. This is from at John underscore Earl IV on Twitter.
John Earl! It's John Earl!
How important will it be to have the same starting quarterback for all 12 games in the 2022 season? And I'm going to kick it to, let's see, who do I, let's get Don V. Don V, you lead off on this one if you want to.
You said the same quarterback for all 12 games?
Yep.
It don't mean shit if he ass. I mean, is he good?
Okay, he's above mid.
All right. I saw him at the spring game. He looked all right, but
yeah,
he played. I mean, really, he threw some hospital balls in the spring game, bro. He could have. He gonna get somebody killed in a real game, bro. I mean, we gonna talk for real.
Yeah,
some of them balls he threw in that spring game get somebody killed in a real game, bro. Like, let's keep it a band.
Yeah, I mean, like, Wells definitely, I think, impressed me the most in the spring game. Those two touchdown passes to Caleb Smith. If we can do that every game, fantastic. I mean, I don't care. I mean, you see what happened with, and this isn't a knock on anyone, but you saw what happened with Ryan Willis a few years back, and Hendon Hooker comes in and takes over, and, you know, then Hendon's the guy. It's like, I want who's best. I want who's playing the best. At this point, it doesn't matter. Whoever is the best man for the job, that's who I want out there. Always.
Danny, well, you got anything on this one?
I mean, I will just say this. Danny. Sorry, I thought you said David. No, go ahead, Danny. Sorry.
Yeah.
No worries, guys. Hey, it starts and ends with Grant Wells this year. I mean, it's going to start and end with at the quarterback position, as it always will. There's not really anything – you don't need to think too hard about that. I've heard Malachi Thomas brought up, too. We didn't really get to see him at all in the spring game, obviously. But once they solidify the quarterback position, we get the announcement, we get that offensive line in place. They just need to start cranking it out. That's all that it comes down to for me.
I want to see somebody play 12 games, because I think if we have somebody play 12 games, Wells, Brown, whoever, it means we didn't get the offensive line injured. Because I think if you tell me we have quarterback, you know, Grant Wells played 8 games, Jason Brown played 4, somebody on the offensive line got hurt and they got the shit knocked out of them once or twice and they were out multiple weeks. So I'd love to see one guy, but to Don's point, if he's ass, it doesn't matter. If he's ass, you got to pull him. Now, he goes out there and plays solid. I don't expect spectacular, but if you play solid, lean on the Brent Pry defense, I'd be fine with the guy going 12 games.
You can win games with a game manager.
It's true.
Yep. You can win. I mean, Fuente's offense, I used to like it when he had manageable quarterbacks, because it's a quarterback-friendly offense until he forces them to run too much. And that's what he did with Brunmeister and even Gerard and other quarterbacks. It was too many quarterback powers and too many runs when you have running backs that can do the same thing. And I think, you know, I know Tyler Bourne. I knew Tyler Bourne before he came to Virginia Tech, and I've talked to him. They know what they're doing. I mean, as far as, you know, to Don V's point about him being ass, I think that's anything. I think if a competition with Prize guy now, if he doesn't get it done, they're going to look elsewhere. But I think right now it's more so about putting the responsibility on everybody versus on one person. I think a lot of times there was too much put on Brunmeister. And even though it was a quarterback-friendly offense, meaning when I say that, I'm talking about the reads and everything they were forced to make, they didn't really have that many reads. But at the same time, you can't run your quarterbacks that much. It just doesn't prove to be successful.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit more real quick, because one of the biggest criticisms I had last year is that you've got the read option in your tool book, right? But so often they were essentially design handoffs. But then when you're not decoying anything, your quarterback's no longer a decoy. So when he's running, and when he's not, he's not. You're not. There's an element of the offense that's supposed to be the option and making the defense confused as to who's going to have the ball. But you're taking that away with the predictability of the calls. So, I mean, that was my beef with the way the things were called last year. And that hurt Burmeister when he's running the ball because the defense is keying in on that. They're looking at it and saying, okay, well, they're going to run power when they go in this motion or when they're in this formation and go in this motion. I mean, they were telegraphing that all the time. We saw it coming, and the defenses that we played saw it coming too. And Burmeister, you know, the whole joke was the Perkmeister thing when he was popping pills on the sideline trying to get back in the game. I mean, we got our quarterback that's getting beat the hell up, and we're not doing anything to make his game come to him better and get him comfortable back there. And that was a consistent problem throughout.
Well, that's scheme. That's what I mean about scheme. Like a lot of times in those after Gerard Evans and those guys left, and then the following year you had Josh Jackson, they still finished the season ranked. They won 9 games. But after that talent left, those 2 years left, they were forced to coach those last 3 seasons, right?
Yep.
And what you saw was a lack of scheme and lack of creativity. So, for example, after bye weeks or off weeks or even in the second half, you never saw any new plays. You never saw any new situations where they would put any wrinkles. You wouldn't see anything where they would take somebody and put him in the slot where he was out at the X. Like they didn't mix things up. It wasn't really until that last year where they did the fake field goal and fake they got crit because they knew they were going to be gone. But to your point, B, you know, a lot of that is more so just scheming and coaching, you know, and having wrinkles and knowing how to use your personnel. You don't have to look. Football is not a complex sport when it comes to coaching. You got to just take your personnel and adjust to it. A lot of times, you know, with the offense plays we had, they were predictable. I mean, the jet sweep wasn't the problem. It was the timing of when they called it.
Yep.
A lot of teams run the jet sweep. It was the timing of it.
Situational play calling.
Yeah. The timing, the location on the field going into the boundary when you didn't need to. Some of the most frustrating parts of the last few years, especially like you run that jet sweep into the boundary and it's like 2nd and 4. Brian, you got to talk me off a ledge. He's like, you know, you do that play and it works, you're going to get the first down. If it gets blown up, it's 3rd and 11. It's 3rd and 12. It doesn't make sense to call that play to that side of the field in that situation. And that's the one thing over the past 3-4 seasons that got frustrating. It was situationally, it got worse and worse and worse. And, you know, somebody, you know, it was on here, like, when was the moment that you felt Fuente wasn't the guy? And it was Liberty. I lost my shit. Go back and listen to that episode on 2020. I literally lost my shit that day on this podcast. And that's when I was done. Because, you know, you looked on the side, there was no juice with the players. That's one of those games where John, Dwight, Don, y'all have made a point. We've all been discussing it. Go out there and squash them. Go out there and make them that our bus ride to Lynchburg, the most miserable bus ride of their life. With ODU in the first game of the season, make that walk back to their locker room the most miserable 100-foot walk of their life.
You need to make sure that they don't want to come back out after halftime.
Damn right.
If teams like that roll into your place, you need to make sure that they don't want to come out after halftime.
Again, I mean, that situation in football, that kid, I think he transferred to some D1AA school, but we were playing Richmond last year. I think we had a turnover. We stopped him. And then they put him in, the backup quarterback, and he threw a pick.
Oh, yes.
That's what I mean about, like, that's not – you don't need to be an offensive coordinator to know that we're not up enough to put a backup quarterback in, and we're at our own 20. You know, it was a close game. He threw a pick. That's what I mean about, like, you can look at the Wake Forest game when we lost at Wake Forest. We got, what's his name, Khalil Herbert. And he's not touching the ball. You know who was running the ball that night? Hendon Hooker. And he wasn't 100%.
No.
That's why I said some of this stuff, most of this stuff is scheme, guys. It's scheme.
It's just when I think an interesting point here, I'm going to make this real quick. This is the first time in a while where Virginia Tech's offensive coordinator hasn't been the quarterback's coach. You've got Brad Glenn. He's only the quarterback's coach. And when we got a chance to talk to him back in March, kind of when he was first hired, he and all the other assistants, and he said he's really excited just to only work with the quarterbacks. You know, he's been offensive coordinator before. He knows how it is. But he can sit there and develop Grant Wells, who I should remind you guys, if you've forgotten, he's got another year after this, and then he's got a COVID year if he wants it. So he's got potentially 3 years playing for Virginia Tech. He might not be at his best this year, maybe, but he's got plenty of time to develop with a quarterback's coach who is solely focused on him. Now, how the communication works with Brad Glenn and Tyler Bowen is going to be interesting. I'm sure that's something that'll come up throughout the season and, you know, throughout the future. But the development of the quarterbacks with a quarterback only assistant, I think that's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think that dynamic is going to be interesting to see how that works out. You know, you talked about having Glenn there. You also have, obviously, Rudolph has had some offensive coordinator experience as well. So, you know, you've got, you know, three guys that have at least called one game in their career at this point. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic works. But I think there's a lot of potential there as we kind of head into the season. But I'm gonna jump over to this next one, and this one is a little bit of a different angle here. And this is to everybody, so whoever wants to chime in, go for it. But this is from Mac Parker on YouTube. Is the hype around the new coaches masking an obvious below 500 team?
Ooh.
So we're getting spicy here, guys.
I'll go first here. I don't know if it's an obvious below 500 team. Like, I talked about this off the top. Like, the team that Fuente inherited in 2016 from Beamer is a lot better than the team Pry is inheriting in 2022 from Fuente. With that being said, like, this team still won 6 regular season games last year, right? Like, and I think they're upgrading a quarterback. I don't know if it's an obvious below 500 team. And that's before you even talk about the schedule itself, which there are a lot of teams that lost a lot or have questions, right? Like,
yeah,
UVA's got an entirely new coaching staff. UNC's been all bark but no bite, right, with Mac Brown. Like, Pittsburgh, I think I agree with David. Like, Pittsburgh's really talented. I think, you know, they're my pick to win the Coastal. But – you know, you can even like squint a little bit, and they got some questions too, right? Keaton Slovis, a quarterback coming over from USC. Like, what does that look like? They lose Kenny Pickett, they lose Jordan Addison. Yeah. So there's some questions there, even though they have a lot of talent. Like, every team's got questions. Miami's got an entirely new coaching staff. NC State under Dave Doran, like, anytime NC State's got expectations, they tend to lose. That's kind of where. Not great, right? Yeah. So, and like, ODU is winnable. Liberty is winnable. Like, there are a lot of winnable games on this schedule. I push back a little bit saying this is an obvious below 500 team. Now, is the excitement over Pry and the coaching staff for year one, you know, making people's expectations, maybe the fan expectations a little bit higher than probably what they should be? Yeah. But I think it's like that with almost any new coaching regime. That's what happens. There's a bump. Everybody's more excited about the future than they were about the, you know, the past. So, you know, I think that's part of it. I think that's natural. Anytime there's a coaching change, you're moving on from something that didn't work out. But at the same time, like, I don't think this is an obvious below 500 team. Yeah. I don't see it.
I'm going to say this real quick, and everybody kind of gather and think about last year. This team was on the doorstep of beating West Virginia in Morgantown in September. On the door, this close. This team was one drive away from beating a 11-win Notre Dame team in Lane Stadium. That wasn't a joke team last year. They had them, and they let it slip. Syracuse game, literally a bomb in the last 40 seconds. Lose that game. Dwight, I'm going to throw it back in. I've been talking with Brian about this all week. You were there. And you were watching, go 92-93. How many close games that team was in? And the next season, they win 8 regular season games and 9 at the bowl.
Well, yeah, no,
this team has talent.
I wasn't there, but I was coming in. But I know Grayson. But yeah, Grayson. I was being recruited by him. I was watching Grayson. I know he wants to talk too. I'll just say this. I pulled up the record. It's funny you did that, Curtis, because that's what I was getting ready to say to the guy watching on the YouTube broadcast, is that even when Jonathan was there, you go back, you know, to 2013, 14, and 15, 7-6, 7-6, 8-5, and 2012, 7-6, right? At the end of the day, even if you throw in the 2004 season when they won the ACC their first year in the ACC, there were several games that could have went either way. So in some of those 7-6 and 8-5 seasons, Beamer's last 4 or 5 years, there were several games where it was a call, a missed field goal, a fumble snap. Even the year when they had Joshua Jackson and they were playing Oklahoma State, getting ready to go up 14-0, they fumbled the ball at the goal line. If they score, they go and win that game, and they win 10 games in Fuente's second year.
Yeah.
My point is not to become cliche-ish, but there's a fine line. This is – I'm just going to say this. You mentioned, Curtis, the 92 era. That's rock bottom, bro. Virginia Tech fans have not seen rock bottom. We're just spoiled, and we have high expectations. My second point, I'm going to let my man Grayson rock the mic. At the end of the day, this is not hype around Pride. Ain't nobody hyping up Tech. We ain't getting no votes. UVA was picked to finish ahead of us in the Coastal. First time I've ever seen that, bro. And then on top of it, we got no votes. So at the end of the day, man, like, ain't no hype. What you have around Virginia Tech fans is excitement, because you can just see that things are going and trending in the right way when it comes to in-state recruiting, getting the right Virginia Tech guys, having a personality, having a coach that lets his assistants interview where we can know more than just the head coach. There's a connection with the fans. Again, that's just people being excited about someone caring about their program, the alumni connecting, you know, not just the football players, but I mean, Mike Young and Pry, you know, they're tight, you know, they got respect for each other. So it's just the energy, man. It's not about, like, nobody's talking about Virginia Tech, right? Which is a great thing, but go ahead, Grayson. I know you got to talk.
Well, no, exactly what you just said, Dwight. It's not about masking any type of win situation or whatever. It's people are excited. Like, I don't know if you guys remember this or not. The video of Brent Pry, Corps Cadets versus Civilian Snowball Fight, and he's out on the drill field participating in that. Last regime never did that. Never didn't even pretend to want to do that. And people could say, oh, Brent Pry is putting on a front. No, he's not. That's him. He wants to be out there. He wants to be having a good time. He's saying and doing all the right things. And, like, at first I'm like, is he just doing this just to do it? And I just saw that, you know, Mark Packer came in and they did the ACC kind of roundtable with Virginia Tech. And you can tell that Brent Pry wants Virginia Tech to be great. You can tell that he wants us to be a national powerhouse again, wants us to get back to a winning culture. And so it's not like – it's not about 500 or less. It's about Virginia Tech fans being excited to have a head coach who wants to be in the building, wants to be in Blacksburg, cares about the fans, cares about the players, cares about all of it. That's it. That's all I got.
Awesome, Jason. Hey, yeah. I think John's got something he wants to kind of piggyback on that with.
Go ahead, John.
You guys hear?
Yes, sir.
Cool. Yeah, real quick. I don't know if you guys watch ACC media, but that clip of him shouting out a recruit, he's saying, we got a big one. Yeah, so whatever happens this year is going to happen. I think we all expected him to get in there and build his team. But stuff like that is going to make – I'm not even playing no more. But if I was a recruit, that would make me want to go play for the guy, period. Yeah. That would make me excited. So like Dwight said, everyone's so excited because we haven't seen in the last five or so years. We haven't seen that. You know, so it's becoming more familiar with what Hokie Nation is all about. That's all I got.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think we're seeing, you know, we've seen what we didn't have, and I think now that we're seeing what we have, I think we're excited about that and for what that means down the road. I think we understand the limitations that are potential for 2022 just based on roster construction and depth overall. But that's not to say that it's an obvious below 500 team either. I think there is talent on the roster. I just don't think we have, as Pry said, I don't think we have enough of it right now. Right. So I think that's kind of the fact of the situation.
Hey Brian, last point you just said, that OGs and people that coach or pay attention in the media know why he said that. That's a motivating tool. See, people didn't hear that. People heard they don't have enough talent. He is challenging the guys in the 2 and 3 deep when he says, I just don't think we have enough of it. The guys playing behind the starters hear that, and they take it personal. The regular fan heard that and was like, oh, my God, we're not going to make it. He knows who's listening to that because those players hear that and read that quote too. He's challenging. That's an indirect challenge.
Yep.
Trust me, man. I know the game. Yeah, man.
All right, we got a couple more here from the fans, and then we're going to get a little bit of a wrap-up here to kind of call it a night. But the next one that we'll go to is from at SteveBryce2020 on Twitter. And this is kind of a throwback to 2021 or even before for a lot of you guys. What was the game or moment in the last few years that let you know that Coach Fuente was not the guy for Blacksburg?
I'm sending this one out. I already said Liberty. It's y'all's floor.
Liberty.
Mike Liberty.
Liberty. Hey, real quick. I'm sorry. Like, I say Liberty a lot. Like, some people are going to be like, oh, yeah, ODU. And, you know,
Don V would say ODU.
The reason why I don't say ODU is because I know some weird stuff was happening in that game. But, like, whenever you lose your quarterback, weird stuff happens. I know the defense wasn't getting a stop. Everybody was flaming Bud Foster after that, which, you know, rightfully so. That was poor performance. But, like, anytime you lose a quarterback in the middle of a game like that and your backup's not ready to go, like, stuff goes a little sideways. So
nail in the coffin moment for me. There were a few games before, but the nail in the coffin was Notre Dame last year. After that game, I was like, it's over. See ya.
Hey, yo.
Good riddance.
I agree with my homie Mike, man. It was Liberty. But I will say this, man. ODU had me on tilt, but the one that did it, but it kind of got masked because Hendon saved the season was the Duke loss.
Oh, yeah.
Because I stepped out. I don't miss Tech games. I last year was the first time I was back in Blacksburg for the spring game because I had made like 16, 17 consecutive spring games. So you guys know how much I love Tech. I was talking to Pearson Prelo before he came back to coach. We talked about how, like, when Tech lost on Saturdays or whatever day, we were done for the rest of the night, right? That Duke debacle, I went to the Wu-Tang Snoop concert. I was like, okay, this will be a safe night. And I had the phone. I was watching the game on my phone with my wife. And I'm like, why are we rotating all these quarterbacks? What are we doing? Next thing you know, it was 45-10. And that Duke team was horrible. And they kept showing Fuente on the sideline chewing gum. And he had his headset on. And he just never changed his faces. And I was like, yo, he ain't it, man. I started to go back and circle around to guys like Don V and other people who were adamant that he wasn't it. And the thing about this, and Jonathan knows this, when you are a former player, whether it's your high school, especially your college like Tech, I don't care if it's Oscar the Grouch as the head coach. We want to see the program win. I wasn't anti-Fuente. I just wanted us to see us win. This is my program, bro. And, like, that Duke debacle was bad, but Liberty, I was ready to drive up there, bro. Real talk, full disclosure.
What made Duke bad? What made that Duke game bad is they were honoring the 1999 team that night. That made it even worse.
Grayson, thank you.
Oh, no, I know where you're going.
Because my cousin was there, and I asked him, and he was like, first of all, it weren't even that many people from the 99 team there. Because of him and the lack of this connection. And then when I read, he didn't know it and he didn't talk to them. I said, bruh, it's over.
All right, what about you, Danny? We lost Danny.
We lost Danny.
Where's Danny at?
Is he
giving blood? I got to check on my guy. Where's he at, man? He's in
something. I don't know. He just went off. So
what's going on with Danny, man?
I don't know. We lost Don, which, I mean, that's
cool. I think Davi had to kick off, so, yeah.
Yeah. Blink twice if you're
it's
okay.
Fine, it's fine. We got one more time with this last question about what we're thinking.
Yeah, let's go with this last one here real quick. So we're about to talk predictions, but let's first gauge some expectations. At Hokie and Bama on Twitter asked, what would you all consider a good first season under the new staff?
No, don't worry.
And let's go with David on this one first.
As somebody in the media who covers this team on a regular basis, I would say getting to and not necessarily winning it, but at least getting to a bowl game. I think winning it would be a bonus, but getting to a bowl game, which means you finished above 500. That is a successful season. Again, as we've talked about many times, football is a game where there are many injuries. The margins can be ever so slim. You don't know what's going to happen. But if in year one, Brent Pry and his staff can overcome any challenges they face and get to a bowl game, I think winning it is a – not. I'm not going to, you know, put a grade on it, but that would be a pretty good season for a first year. You know, just with the cupboard that was kind of left with the depth that, you know, there's – as I said earlier, there's pretty good 22 starters, but after that, the depth kind of wanes. So there's not a ton to work with. If you can get to a bowl game and show that off to recruits, guys in the transfer portal that, you know, might be interested in transferring to your program in the spring or winter, you know, I think that is a good starting point for year one, because you can say, hey, look, you know, we didn't completely fall off the face of the earth. It might be a rebuilding year, but we still had some success.
John, what about you?
Yeah,
I agree with him, man. Definitely going to a bowl game, winning the bowl game is big. But I just want to not to be okay with losing, man. I want to see a fire. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like last year, many times, our players were kind of used to losing, man. It was normal to lose. And we saw a lot of guys, speaking of bowl game, we saw a lot of guys opt out the bowl game. That never happened when I was playing, you know. So I think it's important that we bring that back this season. But I'll agree with David, man. Making a bowl game this year.
Grayson?
I think making a bowl game, 6-6, and you got to win one of the big three, and you got to kick UVA's ass. You beat UVA, and you win either Boston College, West Virginia, and I'm going to say Miami.
All right.
Win one of those, preferably West Virginia, beat UVA, make a bowl.
Dwight, are you still with us?
Yeah, I am. My bad.
Right. You're good, man. You're good. So what's for you successful season?
I like David's point. That's where I left off at. But I think if they can get to a bowl game, also if they can win games they're supposed to win, that has always been – the knock on us since I was at Tech, since before I got to Tech. But I'm part of that group that kind of set everything off. And you look about all many teams at Tech that would have played for a national championship or would have went to a BCS Bowl, Alliance Bowl, or a New Year's Day Bowl. We were always like a play here, you know, the Miami of Ohio's, the Temple games. If Pry can get us over that stigma of winning the games we're supposed to win, this is a 6-7 win team. Because you look at the schedule, I don't like doing that because I know the schedule's tricky no matter what season. Even Alabama's, you can't do that. But I feel like if there's a mindset where they can win games they're supposed to win, where we're not like, man, how did we lose that game? I mean, you got the so many games, the Matt Ryans and all those different games where you like, man, we had that game. Like you guys, Curtis, you just mentioned it. Like last year, man, last year I was in Richmond watching the game on my phone, man. We were killing Notre Dame. We got that pick six. We're up 9. I'm like, we're going to beat Notre Dame in a primetime game. This is perfect. And bad clock management, crazy plays and substitutions, and then we lose the Syracuse game again. We're killing them. I mean, and then you give up a big play. I mean, but you can go back to even when the Fuller brothers were there. We were in FedEx Field, and we lose at the last 20 seconds against Cincinnati.
Yep.
So if Pry can get us to a point where we can win games we're supposed to win, and I mean, what does that mean? Games when you're the better team. Because I think now you have, what, 4 or 5 games right there. Because, I mean – there's nobody on the schedule right now. Like usually, back, especially when Jonathan McLaughlin was there during his era, they were playing like the Alabamas to start the season. I mean, they were playing because at that time, Jonathan and them they earned the right to do that. We put them in the position where they were now carrying the torch, and they were playing those big kickoff Chick-fil-A games, and they were ranked, and they were featured, and they deserved all that. Right now, I'm glad we're where we at. We need to laid the found the groundwork down to get back to that. So if Pratt can just show me a competent football team that knows what they're doing after a timeout and they win games, mixed in with some trick plays and some new wrinkles and an identity, because again, having an identity, I think that's a recipe for a good season.
I'm going to go with what Grayson said. I love the way you put it, Grayson. Go to a bowl game, beat UVA, and beat a big three.
Mm.
Keep your in-state rival where they've been for the last 20 years. Make a statement, but get to a bowl. But to your point, Dwight, too, I love what you're saying. I want, like, when Don V and John, we've all kind of made that point. When ODU decides they're going to come to Blacksburg again, they're walking in defeated. They like, man, we don't want to go play them. They're going to beat the shit out of us. We're going to go home hurt. That's the way I want it to be. I want teams that do not have the same level of players come in with a defeatist mentality. And if we can get that, you win a lot of games by that alone, because the other guy does not think they can compete walking through or walking into the stadium. All right, Brian, let's hit one more with all these guys. I think I know where all of you guys are going to land on this, but we're going to hit it up anyway as our closing question. I think we've lost Mike with the kid, but that happens. we know, but for the three fathers on this call up top here.
We know. We know. It's all good.
All right, over under 6.5. That's what Vegas is putting us at. Let's go with where you're at, Dwight. Over under 6.5.
I got us over, man.
All right.
I got us over. I like the energy. I think we still a game or two, man. I like, you know, especially I think we all touched on this. Grayson talked about this as well, man. Just that first game against BC in Blacksburg is a night game. I think, again, you saw that last year with North Carolina. Our fan base, shout out to Hokie Nation, everybody that's watching this right now. Our fan base for decades has helped us win games. I know that sounds crazy because it's not no magic involved, but you give them a great product, they will support it. They will come. You know what I'm saying? You build it, they will come. They will come. And I think Tech is due. I don't think this is an 11-win team or nothing like that. But I think, you know, the energy is right. I got us over. But this is not nostalgic talking. This is more so just looking at, as David and Mike broke down about their assessment and just looking at the teams we play. I mean, there's no giving against any team, like whether it's UVA and all that. You know, you look at UVA game, there's been many times when we were clearly the better team and we only won like 24-21. So it's not like, you know, we're just going to blow them out, but I just feel like you can win those games. West Virginia's a winnable game. Boston College is a winnable game. You know, Pittsburgh is going to be tough, but I mean, it's not like, you know, other than when they had Pickett, it's not like they just put up 45 points. So I got us over.
David?
Yeah, David, let's hit you yet next.
Yeah, I've got the over. I think I've been somebody who has said for a while now, you know, having covered the team, getting a chance to cover Brent Pry in the spring and kind of learn more about his staff and the way they want to go about things. You know, again, margins are slim, but if Virginia Tech can stay healthy and we can – and player development is obvious. You can see guys getting better. I think this is a team that can win 7, maybe 8 games. Okay. I don't think there's any game that's necessarily out of the question. You know, maybe that's because you know, of the state of the ACC, just the state of Tech's schedule. You know, I think Tech probably right now, if I would have to guess, I think Tech wins 7 games. Tech. You know, I think that's a good number. You know, those Old Dominion, Wofford, Liberty, those are 3 games you need to win. Virginia, that's a 4th. Duke and Georgia Tech, that's 2 more. Okay, so which game are you going to steal? Or, you know, what other games are you going to win? I don't think the schedule is unfavorable, but I also think you have to have some luck as well. Luck's going to factor into it. I think overall this is a team that I've got them winning 7 games. And I don't think 6 wins, if Virginia Tech, again, I said earlier, making a bowl game, that's a success. If you can win 6 games, that's a success, because there's going to be other factors that go into it. But as of now, you know, I've got Tech 7 wins. I've got the over.
All right. Let's go to Mike next as he feeds his child there.
feeding the baby. And what was it? It was the over-under is what, six and a half?
Six and a half.
Yeah, man, I'm leaning over to 7-5. But I think the 6-7 win range is pretty much right on the money. I mean, a lot of stuff needs to go right for it to be any higher than that, realistically, with the roster, the depth issues in the trenches. I'm sure you guys have touched on it when I was stepping away from my computer for a few minutes. Offensive and defensive line depth, you know, I think is a major issue. It's an area where injuries crop up most often. I do think Joe Rudolph gives the offensive line a fighting chance, but the defensive line is where I have a lot of concerns. If you're looking at, like, you know, are you going to be able to get after the quarterback consistently once you get past the starters? Like, that's a huge question I have. Playmakers on the outside, I'm still not sure what we have in terms of, like, proven depth there. I know there's a lot of talented young guys we're all really excited about, but we got to see it on the field first. So there are a lot of questions with this roster, but there's a lot of questions, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of questions with the rest of the ACC too. And I think with the schedule, the way it shakes out, there's a lot of winnable games on the schedule, even for a team that's rebuilding. So I'm leaning 7-5. I think if, you know, you're going to bet a 6.5 win mark, I think you bet on Brent Pry and his staff figuring it out in year one and kind of getting, I don't want to call it a dead cat bounce, because that's usually what ends up happening when you have a coach going out the door. But, you know, I think Pry and his staff, they're going to be able to get more out of this roster than Fuente was able to get out of more talented rosters, if that makes sense. I just think the coaching staff's going to be a lot better. I think it's going to put the players in a lot better position, even though this is far from the most talented team Pry will have in his time here.
All right, John, I'll let you go next.
I'm going over as well. They got the ability to be 3-0 going into West Virginia, and I really believe that. I think we can definitely go 3-0 going into West Virginia. That's a big-time game. Then we're 4-0. Then we're on a roll. You know, that's how the seasons work. You know, you get on that roll, you keep going, you get better and better. So that's the first three games right there. Then we have a challenge in West Virginia, and then you got the ACC. But then you got Georgia Tech, Duke, Liberty. That's six. I'm already calling it. So in between that, you're going to get two or three more wins, I think. So
you can steal at least one, right?
I know we're going to steal at least one or two. So I'm going over.
All right, Grayson.
Based on – y'all are going to hate me, but based on what I don't know about this coaching staff, I'm taking the under based on these last 5 years alone. I know it's a new regime, but I'm taking the under. I got us at 6-6, you know, 50-50. But I just the NC State, the Miami game, even Duke, UNC, and Georgia Tech, even those games worry me. You just never know. Like, coastal chaos, it just – you never, ever know. It's a complete toss-up. But if we can start the season 3-0, if we start the season 3-0, we get that BC win – I could see us winning seven games, but right now I am taking the under.
Who's got BC guy coming back? Who they got coming back at quarterback?
The guy who burned us last year.
Yeah, he was.
The second string, Phil Dracovich or whatever, who made us look stupid.
Yeah.
No, he was playing with a broken hand last year and still did some work. So yeah,
he had a career day.
All Tech needs to do is win literally three games in September and October total, three games, because they should go undefeated in November, right?
All right.
Like,
okay.
The closing stretch is Georgia Tech, Duke, Liberty, Virginia. The best team there is probably UVA, then Liberty, but Liberty lost a lot. I mean, Georgia Tech and Duke, are they going to have five wins between the two of them? Maybe not, right? So – I mean, you could go 4-0 in November. Literally win three games in the first 2 months, you should hit seven.
Hey, yo, I understand Grayson's pain because, see, with Grayson, I'm a therapist, you guys, and I'm licensed, and that's trauma.
That's trauma.
That's why I don't blame Grayson, because I get it. Because I know what Grayson's going through, because I told people, man, after I sat in that rainstorm, we gave that game away to Cincinnati in the Military Bowl. I said I was never coming back. I was a scorn lover. I sat there with wet. You, have you ever had wet socks and I was there with my whole family. I was stoked. Oh, I'm too big to be that stoked, bro. Yo. And I was like, yo, I'm done. We gave that game away, you know, and I was like, I'm done. So yeah. I think Grayson's I don't think there's no right or wrong answer. I like what Grayson said, but I think I'm cautiously optimistic right now. I just I am excited about the ODU game because we're going to know out the gate what kind of team we got. Obviously, teams either get better or they get worse. So I don't want to make too much. If we win 45-10, I don't want to get carried away because we got some fans that'll be talking about playoff runs. But if we look confident and we're intense and we're flying around, I'm gonna win that game. I'll take it. But
there we go.
I'm gonna jump in here real quick because I like Dwight's point. I like Grayson's point. I like the things that Mike said as well. But where I'm going is kind of a little bit of what Dwight said, a little bit what Grayson said. So. And kind of going back to what Dwight said, the previous question, take care of the winnable games. So we've got, in theory, 6 winnable games on our schedule.
Yep.
Very winnable games. So if we can take care of those, and then as John said, steal 1 or 2, that gives us the over. So my heart's saying I think we can get the over. Now my mind's saying is that if we're not undefeated or close to it getting to October, it could get – a rough stretch for a while there, and we need to see how we respond to that adversity going into those winnable matchups down the stretch. We don't want to let games in October dictate how we play and how we respond to these more winnable games that are coming in November.
Yep. I'm going to just stick it at this. I'm over 6.5. That's it. I'm over 6.5. I'm over. In a couple weeks here, me and Brian are going to be doing a preview. Brian, a few weeks ago, told me he was going to be under, so y'all are clearly changing this man's mind about what he thinks this season is going to be. I'm over right now because it is some optimism. It is thinking about – I just keep looking at games last year that were that close, and we're better at the quarterback position. We downgraded at wide receiver. We've upgraded at offensive line coach. We have a lot of core defense coming back. And you're going to a scheme, say what you will, this is a scheme these players were recruited for. This is a scheme these players were recruited for. No knock on Jahan, but we were trying to do some different things. That's going to be a big piece that the system's what these guys are supposed to play in because this was Bud's crew. All right, we're going to make one quick announcement. We're going to wrap it up here. Starting 2 weeks from tonight, the Boundary Corner podcast is going to start coming live to you guys on Tuesday nights, 9:30, not Wednesday. Only going to be doing it once a week. Me and the big guy here, our professional lives have been very successful the last couple of years, and we've gotten some additional responsibilities with our work. So it's kind of tough with families to pull 2 nights a week, to pull multiple hours away. So 1 night a week, 2 weeks from tonight's when we start that. You might see us flex for Mondays if we have a Thursday night game, but we wanted to put that out there for all of us.
Hey, yo, I just want to say, hey, thank all y'all, man, like Grayson, the Sons, all you guys, David, Mike. I know what you're talking about, yo, because – I got 3 podcasts. I got the joint I do with Mike, that seasonal. I got the Victory Life thing I do. Then I got the Victory Life Legacy podcast I do with Danny. But I want to thank y'all on behalf of the fans because the VT community, you know, the podcast community is lit. Like we got, you know, I know Don V and Danny jumped off, but you guys all do great work. I'm fans, you know, Jonathan, everybody, you know what I'm saying? David, I read your stuff. Mike, I check for you. A lot of times when Boundary Curtis and Bia going, I'm on there talking and typing. So, yep. You know, I appreciate y'all. No, for real, man. You know, like, it's great to have great content. And the thing about it is we've been, you know, a program that's been up and down. So we ever start getting back to those days when I was there and Jonathan were there, it's going to be even better. It's going to be more excitement, even more listeners and more viewers. And then finally, man, like, as far as the season, I'm glad I got you guys to lean on, man. I can't take any more ODU Liberty losses. I can't. I'm older. I can't take it. I can't take it, bro. I need some wins. I can't take them losses. Y'all don't understand, man. I'm older than y'all, man. I can't take any more losses like that, guys. That y'all, that Liberty loss, you don't understand. I didn't even want to leave my house. You know what I'm saying?
It broke you. It broke you.
Liberty? Liberty? Come on, bro.
By the way, speaking of dads, everybody, let's check out Mike. Mike is doing the ultimate multitasking right here. The man is feeding his baby and talking on a podcast.
Hey, I always say it. Mike is the hardest working man in Hokie Nation. He wears all the hats, and right now he's on a Hokie podcast panel while feeding his child.
It's the only way I could pull this off tonight with a 6 week old baby. So
that's dedication, man. We appreciate it, no doubt.
We appreciate you hanging in there for the long run. Well, listen, that is going to wrap up the 2022 Hokie season preview panel. Special thanks, Danny Noakes, David Cunningham, Don V, Dwight Vick, Grayson Wimbush, John McLaughlin, Mike McDaniel for coming on tonight. All of you guys sharing your knowledge, sharing your opinion, sharing your input with our audience. And y'all know this is some of y'all's audience as well, man. If you are new to the Boundary Corner podcast and want to hear more, visit our website, boundarycornervt.com, to listen to all of our episodes while you're there. Be sure to hit up the links. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Subscribe to YouTube on your favorite podcast source, including Spotify, Amazon, and Apple Podcast. Check the White Vic out, Victory Light Podcast, Vic757 Podcast starting up soon. Mike McDaniel on the Basketball Conference Podcast with the Sons of Saturday, Hokie Hangover, checking with Breaking SI Stories. John, I know you and Luther are about to fire it up again, the Locker Room Podcast. Get that one going. Check out Mr. Cunningham's writing at Tech Sideline. Follow him on Twitter if you love Hokie football. He is giving some awesome videos from practice. Check him out. He is great. Tech Sidelines podcast. You guys do in the middle of the day. I can't listen to it quite as often anymore because I'm in too many meetings now. Grayson, Sons, you guys keep pushing out that content. I'm ready for the full video release of the preview.
It's coming.
Y'all keep it. Support all these guys. These are Hokies. It's awesome. As always, we let our buddy who lives down in Roanoke, Jason Long, he plays us in. He plays us out. Check him out at jasonlongmusic.com, where he does have a new album. Check his Spotify, Amazon Music, his YouTube and Facebook pages. We thank you all for listening and watching tonight. And as always, I need unmutes to happen, and I need to hear it loud. Unmute them all of you. Unmute you, Mike. You don't have to, Mike. Let's go,
Hokie.